Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
We're talking this hour about how high-profile examples of disrespect for two high-profile African-American women in Washington have lit up a conversation on race, gender, and respect across the country. With us, Brittany Packnett. She launched the hashtag Black Women at Work after the Bill O'Reilly comments on Maxine Waters, James Brown wig, and the Sean Spicer, comments to correspondent April Ryan in the White House briefing room this week. Brittany Packnett joins us from Washington. Laura Washington is with us from Chicago. We've got Washington and Chicago all over the place here. Columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times, political analyst at ABC 7 Chicago. You can join us. Black women, women of color, let's hear it. Have you experienced this kind of slight dismissal? And what's it mean that it's happening to these powerful black women? Why now? Is there some kind of extra permission in the air now? And how do we get past this? People responding online. On the one hand, Darian says, this is identity politics, the kind of BS that helped get Trump elected. It's all political. It's really using minorities to express political attacks on Trump. Okay. Jan says, these incidents are rooted in the racist perception of black women that's existed in this country since the beginning of time. Myrna says, mainstream America feels it's safe to lash out at blacks in uncomfortable situations. Another one here, I am a strong black woman, but please know, black women are still people. Please treat us accordingly. Sarah in Springfield, Illinois, thank you for calling, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I had a comment about both, really. Okay. First, with Sean Spicer, I think, as many people have already alluded to pretty accurately, this resonated with women because every woman, white or black, is hearing in their mind that time at work where they were told, smile more, don't look so angry, or stop doing this or that because, I don't know, it makes them uncomfortable or something.
Yeah.
And so that's why it resonated. And I think what I think white women need to understand is that black women are dealing with this, and it's very similar, but it's just so much greater. And it's coming at all fronts. It's not just coming at them from a boss or an authority figure. It's coming at them from society and from the public at large in a way that we as white women don't really have to see or deal with on a daily basis, but that everybody should be aware of if they really care about their fellow human beings. Mm-hmm. And as far as Bill O'Reilly goes, this is really just par for the course with him. I can think of so many other times when he's treated black people this way and been so condescending, such as, I mean, when he felt the need to fact check Michelle Obama, when she talked about slaves building the White House, or when he said that Mark Lamont Hill looks like a cocaine dealer when he had him on his show. I mean, he clearly has these deep ingrained racisms in him, these attitudes, and it's not the same type of hostility that the KKK have, where they are like overly violent, but he clearly has these negative attitudes, this disdain that he's not willing to face down in a critical way to look at his ignorance and to find out how he could be a better person. And if he really respected Maxine Waters, he would care enough to try and understand her.
Sarah, I really appreciate your call. I mean, Zakia writes to us here on Twitter, not anything new. This goes back to when black adult men and women were called boy and girl. Black women have the double whammy. Laura Washington, do you feel a kind of same old here? Or is there something different in the air now?
I would say both. I would agree that this is nothing new. Decades, in many ways, when you think about the images of African American women and how they were treated during the time, slavery times, there are a lot of parallels. But I think there's an environment out there that's, I think, has evolved since Barack Obama was elected in 2008. And that's when we were all supposed to sing Kumbaya and race didn't matter anymore. But what in fact happened was that there was a serious backlash against him that was instigated, I think, primarily by leadership in Washington. We're not going to work with this man. He's a black man. And then, of course, we all know how Donald Trump stirred that up with his birther movement. He continued that backlash and encouraged this attitude that black folks, women don't matter. And that's where you saw all the racism and misogyny come out during the campaign. And he has continued to that environment as president. If you look at his cabinet, if you look at who's working with him in the White House, as I understand it, he has the whitest and malest cabinet since Ronald Reagan. He doesn't have a lot of women. He has very few people of color around him. He's sending a message that black folks, that women do not matter. And I think that message came out of the campaign, and it continues to be a message that's resonating in Washington and beyond. And I think it's giving people permission to disrespect us as a result.
Brittany, do you see a permissive moment here on this front, or more of what's familiar?
I could not agree more. It is a both and. This is certainly, and I would say, an evolution of what is familiar. A time when these kinds of comments are much more permissive, and quite frankly, when even worse comments are much more permissive. And I think a lot of us who are visible, especially in the activist community like myself, are dealing with the ramifications of that. And it's interesting because I always hear the response that it would just go away if we stopped talking about it, right? We have to deal with the fact that calling out racism is not divisive. Racism is divisive. If folks are tired of hearing about racism, about sexism, about xenophobia, we're far more tired of dealing with it. It's not about not calling out differences or getting rid of differences. It's about not treating people differently because we come from different places. If we root out what's at the base of this, at the foundation, if we pull this thing up by the roots, then we will have far different outcomes. It's why the hashtag Black Woman at Work had been used before. I had never seen it before. It had been used in multiple context because we have been having to identify ourselves as black women at work for a long time. It was original in the way that I used it. As I said, I had never seen it before, but it was high time that we had this conversation and had it publicly so that people couldn't run away from the fact that this happens every day.
Oh, here's a hashtag Black Women at Work. Watching white lawyers wander around wondering who the prosecutor is, never even considering that it could be me. But then you've got this kind of reply, online here. Here's a listener saying, what a bunch of hogwash. Find a spine, Ms. Ryan. What about
it? Oh, my goodness. I got to respond to that.
Okay, Laura. Okay, jump in.
if you just heard her on the air and with Sean Spicer, and if you saw her, the woman has a spine, just like Maxine Waters. They're tough. We have to be tough. We have to be tougher, smarter, more professional, more accomplished than anybody else to survive in these environments. Mm-hmm. So I'm pushing back real hard on that one.
Okay.
That's quite a lot.
but there it is. Catherine in Arlington, Massachusetts. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a white woman, and I wanted to give an example just to speak to the fact that I think as white people, others need to take responsibility for the racism that we've internalized, whether consciously or not, whether we think we're racist or not. We exist in a racist society. And when I was in my graduate program, I remember walking up to a black woman who was a professor and saying something to her. I assumed that she was an administrator. And I asked her for like a paper or where do I put this?
Yep.
And she said, I'm a professor here. And I really felt, I still feel horrible and embarrassed and ashamed of that. But I have to look at that in myself. It didn't come from consciously trying to hurt her or racism, but I'm sure it did hurt her. And I had to look within myself and recognize that there is racism within me, whether I want it or not. I have to look at it. And what one of your guests was talking about, we have to have these conversations. If not, it's just going to remain dormant and underneath and be influencing our behavior all the time. We have to be talking about it and taking responsibility and looking at ourselves because we exist in a culture and a history that has been racist forever, and we are all affected by it. So thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
I appreciate your call, Catherine. I mean, Brittany, I mean, there it is, an example. There's a white collar, white woman who's, you know, perfectly happy to look at the history and try. That doesn't mean she's free of it, though. Who is?
Absolutely. And that, honestly, that kind of reaction is exactly why we wanted this conversation to happen. This is why social media is so effective, because we can make the invisible visible and have people start to look at their own experiences where they either could have been on the offensive end or the defensive end. I really appreciate that caller for being so honest. We are socialized to believe these things, right? We are socialized to believe these things about Black women. And so, yes, as she said, whether we want it or not, whether you want it or not, it's there. The question is, are you brave enough to examine it within yourself and then correct yourself in the future? That's exactly the kind of listening and action that we need people to take. At the end of the day, you know, an effective workplace is an equitable workplace. We're not just talking about an issue of morality, although let me be very clear, we are. We're also talking about an issue of efficacy. I was at Harvard Business School this weekend giving a keynote address about social enterprise, and I talked about the fact that equity in the workplace and equity in social enterprise is about our hearts. It is about the moral question of equity and equality in this country. But we also know that diverse workplaces get more done, and they get more done faster, they get more done better, and they get more done for more people because they have that perspective at the table. If I'm in a diverse workplace, but I don't feel welcome, I don't feel included, I don't feel supported, and I don't have the same opportunities, then it's much more likely that I will leave that workplace. And then whatever cause that we are working for, whatever our bottom line is weakened. So we have to pay attention to this moral question. But if you really think that the moral question isn't for you, then ask yourself if your workplace is equitable, because it'll make it more effective.
Context of White Supremacy, Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, April 13th, 2017. So I have been told this is our weekly broadcast on workplace racism. I got discombobulated right as we went live, and I mean literally, or not as we went live, as the sound clip ended. So as I was about to start speaking live, I was looking at my email to make sure I had all of the emails that folks write in for workplace racism together, and literally someone wrote in a workplace racism commentary right as I was pressing my mute button to speak, so it distracted me a little bit. But certainly feel free to email untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, if you have workplace racism related commentary that you would like to share. I can share online. We can share it live. We can keep it anonymous. I know some people have expressed concerns about, you know, not wanting to get in trouble with race soldiers on their job. Totally logical. So we can keep it anonymous if you would prefer. Or if you just, you know, want to comment, right, on things that are being shared on the program. If you have a suggestion or a tip, that sort of thing, feel free. untiljustice@gmail.com, and we will share it on the air. You can always dial us the number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if we would like to participate. That number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Thursday workplace racism. Really quick from that segment that we heard, and it was a lengthy conversation. We played a couple of different portions from it. It's interesting because you had different white callers dial in, right? There was a white man who called in last week. He was kind of saying that this is all nonsense and that almost suggesting that Black people are playing the race card. We just, you know, get our feelings hurt and whine anytime somebody says something rude to us on the job, basically. But this time around, you have these different white women and the conflation that white woman, man, to be able to come in and, oh, we go through some of the same things. You know, black people have it way worse. Black women have it way worse. But we go through some of the same things with being put down. They are outstanding at being able to manipulate, confuse, and practice racism. That is the key. That is an act of racism. Anytime a white person comes into this sort of discussion to act like they, too, are being mistreated, they, too, are victims, they're pushing all of this again on the man. No, no. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Now, to those, another one popped in. I'm going to get off the screen. So I'll grab these two and get off the screen because that is a little distracting when you see them popping up live time. Okay, so we'll start reading the emails and make sure we get through all of these as we go. We have, I believe, Stacy in the UK with us live as well. All right, starting, get them in the order that they came in. I recently had a performance review at my job of six years that went pretty well. I was rewarded a bonus and a raise for my work over the past 12 months. In my review, the only thing that my supervisor could bring to the forefront as a negative was my tardiness. The company I work for uses a clock-in system that can only be accessed at your workstation, and there is no official grace period anymore. Since switching to this new system about 2.5 years ago, they do allow employees to clock in 5 minutes earlier than their start time for day workers and 5 minutes earlier than their end time to avoid traffic jams with evening workers. I believe a grace period may be allowed at the discretion. Gus T. Renegade has a whole tab for that word discretion. I've said when you see that word discretion, particularly if that is a part of your policy and procedure, I've emphasized the importance of make sure you go through that manual and before you have a problem on the job. If that word discretion is in there, you need to highlight the whole section, maybe even the whole page, if discretion, because that's basically like code for practice white supremacy at your leisure. Whatever you would like to do to the Negroes, feel free. Your discretion. but you really need to be mindful and alert because that's probably what's going to happen. So we'll get back to what they wrote in. I'll give you the whole sentence over again. I believe a grace period may be allowed at the discretion of the keeper that submits the clocked times, but I'm not quite sure, though. I would want to be very certain about all that. All I know is I don't see the white people running to clock in, so they won't be 2 minutes late like the non-white people do. I asked for a later schedule, but was denied because in my department, there is only three people in an area that usually has four workers total, and I'm needed to fill the early day shift. I was presented with a reduced hours full-time schedule by my supervisor, which I have accepted. It's working out a little better than I thought. So far, I am able to get better sleep and not be tardy. Awesome. I can now stay up a little later in the evenings to have much needed discussion on racism with my wife, and with the small raise, I'm not missing out on those few coins by working an hour less each day, thinking about economics as how you spend your time and energy as opposed to just a flow of dollars is a valuable understanding. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Amen. Economics, time, and energy. Before I get to the next email, I also want to remind folks, I forgot to, crazy. I want to remind folks, the great Sabrina Johnson, she was a guest on the program. Last year, she called in when Dr. Welsing's sister, Lauren Kress Love, was on the program. She's longtime student and close comrade of Dr. Welsing over many years. She also has done her own counter-racist work in her own right, great understanding of the system. I spoke with her. She was one of the co-coordinators of the memorial for Dr. Welsing that happened on her birthday last month. And I spoke with her just a couple days ago, and she should be coming back on the program to give us an update on the memorial and just some of her observations on what's been happening with the system. But they are continuing the Welsing Institute. That was the second Thursday of every month, which is today. So they're meeting right now for folks listening in. Obviously, you are not there. But for people in the D.C. area or if you might be traveling through, they're doing the same schedule that Dr. Welsing did, which is second Thursday of every month. Blackburn Center, Howard University. This is in Washington, D.C., 7 p.m. Eastern start time. So it's today. The next one would be in May. May, if you want the exact date, May 11th will be the next one. If you're in the area, you can stop through, visit. They discuss Dr. Welsing's work, current events, a lot of her students, folks who were with her and studying for years. Poet Danny Queen is there. I think he has a lot of the recordings. He archived those lectures over like decades. And so he has audio and recordings for purchase, so you can support. Go in, share your views, talk to folks who got to study with Dr. Welsing for years and soak up information and even do some counter-racist networking. So check it out, second Thursday, and it will be May, June, and then they take a break in the summer, starts back in September. Workplace racism letter number two. I work a lot of 14-hour days, so it's hard to participate live. I know you say reading is more important than watching TV. Oh, this is not even workplace racism related. Just mention that. Next, workplace racism. So this is our young listener in the Bay Area. He's 16, I believe. He has written and called in a number of times, which I think over the years now. So he wrote in, whenever I buy lunch at school, I usually go to this black-owned business known as Catered to You. This is a place where they sell stuff like fries, the most popular meal, and chicken strips, and much more. I go to this particular place not only because their food is delicious, but I want to support them for the fact that they have their own business. The funny part is there is a Popeyes very close to this business, and no competition is brought up, which is amazing. Sometimes I go to the other businesses just to moderate and or try something new, but that doesn't mean that I don't notice the black-owned businesses, which are my favorite type of business. All he wanted to share, that is, awesome, particularly to get young people thinking about that time and energy and what you are going to do with your resources. Time, certainly, but how you're going to spend your time, which establishments are you going to go to, particularly when you have all these incidents of black people being mistreated when they go out to eating establishments. That's not exactly workplace racism, but, you know, same thing. Okay, next. Ooh, buddy. This might be a cowbell. So a person wrote in, I had a disgusting coworker take a liking to me, begin following me around, and while on a work event after hours, my fault, this was years ago, but still I knew better, decided to kiss me without permission. I nicely dealt with it until he wouldn't take no for an answer and became passive aggressive. I finally sent him an email telling him to stop approaching. He makes me uncomfortable unless it's work related. He reacted like I was crazy, played innocent, feigned ignorance, and said he didn't know what he was doing. Was that wrong? Displayed manipulative tactics, but wrote he would leave me alone. He did not. He would get him and his friends to stare me down, glare at me, look suicidal, homicidal towards me, try to chat with people when I was near, try to do things to annoy me and or dominate me. Finally, during a work event, some of his students came up to me asking me why he was so creepy. It was as if they knew what he was doing. One student told me they'd run into at least two women in our city saying that the same coworker was known as a creep. The creepy coworker came up to me and started saying, while glaring, everyone hates me, just want to remind everyone that everyone hates me. I was so annoyed, as I could tell he was trying to goad me to become emotional. I stupidly just smiled. Should I have pressed charges? I wonder if I had been intimidated by him continuously crossing my boundaries. Curious as to how you would have handled that. I think we've said pretty consistently for a while now, I think Emmy and some of our other listeners, male and female, who've, you know, had to deal with the same sort of sexual terrorism, being molested on the job by racists. I think just to make it very clear, and the first time, that's the thing that I think is most important, setting the tone. I think Roz has talked about that a number of times over the years, I think now, and emphasizing, you know, as clearly as you can articulate from the very beginning. And in fact, I suggest ask questions. If they have a training period, or once you get the job and they're going over policy and procedure, make sure you ask a question about sexual harassment so that you let people know, you know, from the very beginning that you're serious, you take that sort of thing seriously, and that, you know, hey, this is not something that I play around with at all. And I would make that clear from the very first time, whatever it is, if it's a touch, if they lean in and try to kiss you, if it's a hug, because we've, I think, had a little bit of everything, patting, all kinds of inappropriate molestation. That's the way we should be thinking. And that's the type of term we should use, written or if we have to verbally communicate about these incidents. But I would immediately snatch away, you know, hey, Susan, Bob, whoever it is, male, female, you know, I do not do any sort of touching on the job. I do not. I have physical boundaries. We are supposed to have a professional relationship. I do not participate in any sort of touching. Please do not ever engage in any sort of behavior like this again, ever. And make that very clear, unambiguous, whatever. And I mean, that's if you're a male and this is another male doing it, male, another female doing it, female, this is another male doing it, another female doing it. I jerk away and make it very clear. You can come up with your own verbiage, but you're basically saying the same thing. This is not acceptable. This will not be tolerated. We're supposed to have a professional working relationship. This is a violation of having a professional working relationship. And I would go to the policy and procedure. I'd have to go and report that to a manager or whomever at the company as well, because that's got to be, if they're reaching out, this person is saying kissing, but any of that's got to be a violation of company policy. I would, I think we talked about this before, if it happens and you don't have a witness and people feeling that, you know, that's something that they would not feel comfortable reporting about, right? We've heard that from males and females. You can make your own decision about if you feel comfortable reporting, if it's not going to be a witness and it'll just be your word against the word of a white person. And they just, you know, we can't take, you know, the word of a Negro over this white person. So, you know, we'll just try to keep you all separate and that sort of thing. Or if they try and retaliate against you for falsely accusing a white person, we've certainly had people who've raised valid concerns about all that. So it certainly, you know, will depend if there's a witness, if this is something that you want to pursue. But I, if nothing else, at minimum, I would make it clear on an individual level with that person that that behavior will not be tolerated. And if it continued, I would have to say something, because it's been my experience when you don't do anything. And I think we've had listeners who spoke to this before. When you don't do anything, when you don't say anything and you just, you know, allow it to continue or try to accommodate them, that sort of thing, it gets worse and worse and worse. And I think we've had people who testified to that as well. So that's my suggestion. Certainly this is United Independent. So if you have your own code about how you deal with that sort of thing, feel free, share what works, because we definitely need that, because there's, as evidence from folks sharing, there's a lot of this sort of sexual molestation going on the job. I will get the rest of the emails as we continue. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. I will get the folks who dialed in with a hand up. We also have another audio clip as well. We'll have two workplace racism audio segments today. Let's see. Folks who dialed in and have a hand up, your line should be open. Feel free if you have commentary you would like to share.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. That audio segment where I was talking about how the behavior tendency of white people when they, I guess, mistake you for your job title. I think when she said that she thought she was someone, I guess, in administration and not a teacher or something like that. Like, I've had some customers come in and they say, you know, well, I didn't know that you work here. Or do you work here? You know, I've had it happen to you know, quite a bit of times. And that reminded me of that. The next was, it was a couple of jokes, maybe like two jokes I heard when I was in the break room. And it was a black female. She was at the vending machine. And I was talking to her about something, and she was, I guess, trying to get a snack out of there or whatever. So one of the bailiffs, sheriffs or whatever, he came in a very bad joke. So, you know, she ends up leaving. And so he says to me, he says, you can go ask her, has she ever seen a one-ear elephant? So, you know, I'm thinking in my mind, you know, like, what does he mean by that? So I would call it a Wilson moment because, you know, what he did was he stood to the side and he kind of like thrust his pelvic area out. And this is an old guy too. So he basically symbolically said it was, you know, male genitalia erected with, you know, testicles and whatnot. So he, you know, he started laughing or whatever. So I was just saying, wow. So he walked off and he said another one about, said, oh, you know, if that doesn't work, he says, you can ask, you know, what's the difference between a blowjob and a tuna fish sandwich? And, you know, like some of the stuff, you know, kind of graphic or whatever. So so he was saying that if she doesn't know the difference, then you can do this and invite her out for lunch. So he's just saying all of these jokes. Like he only said those two, but I've never heard them before. So I guess he says that, or well, he gets those jokes from others who think like-minded like him. You know, I guess that's part of the culture of the system. And the next was, there was I was going upstairs and a black female asked me if I could change out the bin and for the water machine. So the other female, you know, she has a lighter skin tone, a less melanated. I don't think she's a white person, but she says, you know what, you know, we don't need any men around here. So this happened today, actually. And, you know, like, I think I used good codification because, you know, I looked at her and she just looked very just, you know, full of toxic, you know, basically, you know, conditioned non-white person. So I just turned, and then the other black female was saying, whoa, it looks like, you know, such and such is getting offended, you know, that he's a quote-unquote man. So I just said, well, everybody get to do something constructive and drink water, you know, so everybody just have a good day. So I just kept going on about my business. So I guess, you know, maybe some people thought that I was going to react, but I just wanted to bring that up because I noticed, like, when I don't react, like, the same person that's saying something discourteous, they'll, you know, they'll apologize. And this happened today, too. There was another victim, and he was in the office. He's a supervisor. He was in the office, and he said something about, don't bring me, you know, this SHIT or whatever. So he said, you know, I stood there, and I said, well, you know, I just thought I'd drop this off. So I gave him the envelope, and he said, you know, well, I apologize for being mean to you. And then he said, wow, this is the second time I had to apologize today. So what he did was he took back the apology for the white person that was standing in his office. And then, you know, everybody started laughing, but he apologized to me. So I found that interesting. And that's all I have for now. And thanks.
That's pretty tacky. I have to put that up on my list of, that is unique, but that's still pretty tacky, where you have wronged two different people, which requires you to retract the first apology. That is pretty tacky, in my opinion, if I heard that correctly. That is outstanding codification, in my opinion. I've stressed for a number of years that frequently on the job, and this can apply, you know, beyond the workplace, but certainly on the job, oftentimes, not saying anything is the best response, particularly if a question was not asked. And I mean, this even includes if someone should call you a nigger. not saying anything, I have found generally nothing bad can happen to you. A lot of things. If you don't say anything, you can wait a day and come in and say something. You can wait a week. You can wait a month and come back and decide that you want to say something. If you decide that the best course of action is that, you know, this white person needs to get cursed out. Okay. You can wait a day and do that. You can get everything set up so that you can curse out this white person and it will have no collateral damage, as they say, that you don't have any interruption to your employment and to you being able to take care of your support yourself financially, what have you, so that everything flows smoothly. You get to do your cursing and move forward. That's not what I see. People just, I think they call it fly off the handle and do the cursing and then have a hard time trying to get a job. And, you know, it can just go really bad. Not saying anything. You get a lot of options. If you just want to make a note that this happened, if you want to talk it over with someone, if you want to report on workplace racism and kind of get some suggestions, you have a lot of leverage when you don't say anything. And it might even be that nothing needs to be done at all. After, you know, giving it some thought, it might come out that this doesn't even warrant, you know, my time and energy. I can just, you know, move forward. I can make a note that that did happen and move forward. Great codification, in my opinion. And the tackiness, that the jokes and what have you, I would just make note of that. That might even be something to record. In my opinion, when you have offices where they promote that sort of filthy conversation, going to be a lot of mistreatment. That right there, I think, if you're in an environment where that is tolerated and people can make those kind of sexual jokes and what have you, I would definitely be alert. That's been... there tends to be a correlation. This is a loose observation, correlation. But in my work experience, the more of that sort of thing I've had to deal with on the job, the more mistreatment. People at least pretend to be courteous and go through the motions a little bit more when that sort of those type of jokes, that sort of humor is not encouraged. Other folks, appreciate that, our caller in Florida. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you have commentary, things you would like to share, feel free. I neglected to say at the beginning, this is not the program for spectators. I am pretty sure that most of the people listening in probably have a job, even if you're self-employed, as they say. You have a work history. You should have commentary on workplace racism. This is not a broadcast for people to just dial in. And this is great. This is, you know, my entertainment as I get ready for my Thursday evening. Whatever you're going to do, prepare for the weekend. I'll listen to the, you know, tribulations of the Negros on the phone. That's not what this is designed for. This is for folks to share, give their views, perspective on workplace racism strategies, things that can help us out, and even things that you've observed that are of note on the job should be important. Folks should be sharing, not spectating. Other folks that we have not heard from at all have commentary. Feel free.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, everyone on the line. This is Shay calling from Texas. And I wanted to share something that happened on last Friday. I have a code where I do not participate in any outside activities unless they are company sponsored. And I'm really trying to figure out a way to get out of that. But there was a lunch for all the new people. We've had an influx of new people here within the last few weeks. And, you know, there was like a couple of invites went out where there was this lunch and then there was this happy hour happening. And, of course, I immediately declined. So I found that a lot of my fellow victims were attending and was shocked that I declined to go. And it was like, oh, you're not going? I'm like, no, I'm not going. You know, I don't do that type of stuff. And so once they came back from lunch, one of my other coworkers, who I've been kind of working on, and I said, you know, how did lunch go? You know, and she's a black female. She was like, oh, I think I did too much talking on the lunch. And I said, well, what did I tell you about that? You know, and she's like, I know. But, you know, I just kind of talked. And I was like, what did you say? And she was like, oh, I was just sharing things about my life. And I said, do not share your personal information with the people on your job. Do not do that. And that is something I wanted to share with you guys. You guys might have stated that multiple times before. I'm kind of new to the broadcast, but I wanted to share that with maybe some of our young listeners. If you do not have to participate in these meet and greet lunches and things of that nature, I would suggest you not do so. And if you are required to participate, I would recommend that you keep information about yourself to the bare minimum, if you share anything at all. And I tried to warn her of that prior to her going, like, they're probably going to try to, you know, figure everything out about you, but you need to be quiet. She didn't listen. But I wanted to share that with you, with all the callers on the line. Please practice your code at work. And if you do not have to attend, do not attend. And if you have to, kind of be off to yourself and keep quiet. It's none of their business about what your personal life is about. And that's all. And I'll mute my line.
Wow. Excellent suggestion. Let me make sure I say again, whites, alcohol, one of the worst combinations in the known universe. You have to keep that in mind if you're in a work setting, because I know sometimes we are required to be at these type of things, as a female caller just stated, and or, you know, you might think our black mom in Michigan, I think she said before about, you know, feeling like if you don't go, that might be a reason that they decide to fire you or something. So maybe you work out a code, or maybe you go once a month or something like that. Whatever it is, if you have to be there, choose to be there, keep that in mind, that these environments can be extremely dangerous. The tackiness, the racism, just white people and alcohol. I always agree 1,000%. If you can avoid going, don't go. And if you gotta go, you should have a code. And number one on your code should be sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I know folks, they have their virgin drink codified, so they know this is what I'm going to order, my non-alcoholic beverage of choice. And they have a set schedule for how long they're going to be there. Some jobs, they tell you, you know, you have to be at these events for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it is. Fine. If they don't, I think standard 40 minutes. You make your showing, you go around, you talk to the folks. If you are married, if you have a partner, what have you, you go with your partner. You all are together. That can help minimize some of the tackiness if it's an affair where they got music and that sort of thing. But got to be codified. And exactly as the female caller stated, you are not here to chat about your personal business and, you know, where you went to high school, what your hopes and dreams are. And that is not what you are here to do at all. That shouldn't be happening at any point while you're on the job. Other folks, thank you so much for that, ma'am. Other folks that are with us have commentary. I think Stacy in the UK is with us as well.
Have we heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, this is a postal worker from last week. I'm sorry I had to get off early. I was just calling back to thank everybody for your suggestions. And I started a work journal. I can't remember the app that you all suggested for me to download. And I would agree with the one caller. She said to stay codified. I've even started staying codified against my non-white coworkers also, because I realized it's kind of just a very unprofessional environment. And also to the one postal worker who asked me, was I working in a plant or something? No, I work in AOA. And it's like a small office of people, and I work in a collections unit. So, yeah, I don't see my supervisor all the time, but I did actually have an encounter with him today. But I stayed codified, and it was kind of ridiculous. I don't know. He asked me to because he was asking about my route and some addresses about it. He didn't know the addresses to some of the places I go pick up mail, and he asked me to draw him a map, which I thought was very unprofessional. So I didn't know if I was lacking black self-respect because I drew the map, because I kind of felt like I didn't know how to answer with him when he was like, can you draw me a map of where you go? And then I asked him, why did he want me to draw the map? And he said because he wanted to know how much I knew about where I was going. And I responded, well, I go there every day for the last 6 months, so I think I know where I'm going. And he just, like, just draw me the map. So I drew the map. And then also when I first went in there, he, like, told me he was calling me in there, firing me. Then he, like, let's start laughing. So this is, like, the sixth time he's threatened to fire me. But, again, he doesn't have the authority to do it. But, yeah, I'm just trying to practice my code and say more, not get emotional with him or just not respond, because I think he's looking for a response. Like, he keeps coming at me, but, you know, I just try to, like, not have a response and just stay calm and not be emotional. So I'm very emotional by nature, so it's very hard for me to just stay codified. But I'm practicing it at home, and I'm practicing it, you know, before I get out of my car and go into work. So, but I just want to thank the cows and thank you guys, and I'll mute my line.
Right on. Thank you for the update. I'd said that I've been trying to say that. Give us updates. That is always appreciated to let us know. You know, if you use the suggestions, great. If you don't, that's great too. You come, I mean, we're supposed to be using our brain computer, as Dr. Welsing would say. So, but just letting us know which strategy you employed and, you know, if it was successful for you and how things have evolved. But I remember when she called us last week and she was talking about the situation, having the supervisor being discourteous to her and trying to figure out some ways to minimize some of the abuse she was experiencing. And that, which you described him asking you to draw a map, like, that is standard. That's sort of tackiness where they just assume that black people are ignorant, or it's like you're constantly getting these pop quizzes. Like, you got to show us, you know, how intelligent you are. This is our pop quiz for niggers on the job type of thing. I would not, you know, get into any sort of competition with trying to prove or show whites or non-white people how smart you are, particularly if this is a non-white person that's not your supervisor, this is not your manager, this is not somebody that, or you say he doesn't have the ability to fire you. I would not try to get into, you know, impressing him with what have you, just getting your job done. And I think we were suggesting last week, if you could, to also maybe minimize, to have more email contact as opposed to the verbal contact. I think you even had a female listener. She wrote in suggestions for dealing with that sort of thing as well, in terms of minimizing direct contact to try to keep down some of the ugliness. And also what you said I thought was important, where you said you've been using your code with non-white people as well. That code works non-white people, victims of racism. It also works for racists. And on the job, I know Mr. Fuller, I was talking with him about non-white people being on jobs where you maybe have a lot of victims that you work with, non-white people, and they engage in maybe name-calling or discourteous behavior. And he said he developed a lot of his counter-racism code working with other victims on the job. That's how he developed a lot of his code, that you can just figure out certain things that you do. And this is just stuff that you do all the time. Like, I would tell, and even if you work with a lot of non-white people, I would say the same thing about being serious. Get a reputation for that. That's something that will serve you well regardless. And it's been my experience, if you're following logic as you develop your counter-racist code, it generally will work very well with victims and with racists. I mean, now you can make certain, you know, adjustments here and there, but generally, counter-racist code will work. Logic always works. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you had commentary on some of what we've heard from listeners thus far, if you have your own situation that you would like to discuss, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. So far, from what I heard, it sounds like victims of racism and white supremacy is being pretty efficient within their workplace. This is a what I'm about to read is a paragraph that took place down here in South Florida. It is, I would say, it's perhaps an example of workplace racism to its highest point, and also it may be maximum emergency compensatory action. I'll just read it right quick. Killer in gym murder suicide had been fired. The man who shot and killed two managers at a Florida gym before turning the gun on himself had just been fired from the fitness center for workplace violence, police said Sunday. The Miami-Dade Police Department said that Abeku Wilson, 33, of Miami, was let go Saturday as a fitness trainer at the Equinox Gym in Coral Gables due to workplace violence and was escorted off the premises. Shortly after his dismissal, Wilson returned to the gym with a handgun and fired multiple shots at both managers before fatally shooting himself. Police said that the managers were deliberately targeted and that the shooting wasn't random. Equinox issued an email statement Sunday that it was deeply saddened by the deaths of two employees, Janine Ackerman, 35, of Miami, and Marios Hortis, 42, of Miami Beach. Ackerman was the gym's general manager, and Hortis was the fitness manager. There are pictures of both Ackerman and Hortis. It appears that they are white people. And, of course, Mr. Wilson is a non-white black male. I have only saw something like this once before. And it was nothing, well, there's nothing in it that tells me anything different from an act of maximum compensatory action. But I can't be sure, and I won't go any further on it, but it seems to be the reason why Mr. Wilson did what he did was because of his termination. So it's just something that I came across in the news down here in South Florida. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
They have a number of
any questions.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just about to say, if there's any questions, maybe I can answer them based on what I have in front of me and what I've heard all this week. It took place earlier this week, and it's been getting a lot of publicity.
I see. If folks, that is one of my pet peeves. We have a number of folks. This is not a firefighter. This is a number of cows listeners. They will conclude their remarks, and they will pause for like a second, and then they will start talking again. Like, that is like, if you're done, you should be done, because then Gus will be prepared to talk, and they will begin talking again. Like, just, you know, make sure you could take a second, make sure. That's, again, this is not firefighter. This is, it seems, lots of folks. This is one of their favorite habits, to say they're done, but they're just trying to trick Gus. There are a lot of reports on this at the Miami Herald, where you can go through and read about, you know, what they're saying about Mr. Wilson. That's the suspected shooter, alleged shooter. In this case, what they're saying about him and why he was fired and what happened while he worked there. You can go check out a lot of this fascinating study, probably, of workplace racism. Again, even reminding me of Omar Thornton, even though I don't know as much detail about this case. I'm just hearing for it for the first time, so I have to get more into the detail about it to see what Mr. Wilson, what he was alleging about the place that he used to work. Folks have any questions about this, or if other folks have commentary they would like to share? I know we have folks we have not heard from, other folks who we have not heard from at all. If you have commentary.
May I proceed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, greetings, Gus. Greetings to the callers. This is Lemay in Kansas City. It's been a couple of months since I've been able to share my experience with workplace racism, and I've genuinely missed the opportunity to share my thoughts and to listen to other victims. Just kind of summarizing the gap that I've had has been, I've come to some conclusions. Code has been extremely helpful to me in navigating my day-to-day. I have noticed that in my day-to-day interactions, such as stopping to get gas or stopping at supply houses and dealing with white people purchasing for clients, that displaying Black self-respect has always proven to it's always proven to have white people respond in a punitive manner. For example, I was standing at a warehouse waiting to pick up some products, and I had a t-shirt on. I generally do not wear clothing that displays messages. I generally don't wear logos or brands or ads on my clothing, but I did have a shirt that says, I do have a few shirts that are, I guess, buyblack.com. I think I have another one. They sent me that shirt. I have another one that says Black Nutritional Facts. I have one with Elijah Muhammad on the front, Message to the Black Man. So I have a few of those shirts, and I will occasionally wear them while I'm taking care of business and working. And I was in a warehouse probably about, 98% white dominator males that were suspected racists who were in this warehouse. And it's probably about, 80, 90, probably 100 people in the room. I had this shirt on that said Black Nutritional Facts. I think I had that shirt on that day, and that shirt, it says courageous, 100% revolutionary, 100%, coward zero, like a nutritional facts would look on a box of cereal or a box of, or some type of product to store, but it describes, qualities of Black individuals. I didn't make any noise. I make it a point to be very quiet and to be very observant when I'm around suspected racists and non-white people as well. Oh, especially around non-white people, but to be very observant and very quiet and stand straight and to not be bobbing my head or laughing and joking or watching television that they might have posted, in this warehouse while I was waiting for my number to be called. And I was there for about 2 hours. So apparently a group of suspected racists saw me. And before I went to load my products in my truck, one of them made a comment over my shoulder. And I believe he was talking to me. With some other dominators, he was standing in a group, and he said something about, "Are you sure there's no percentage of sweetness, or there's not sugar, or something to the effect of I don't remember the exact comment, but it was something to the effect of, am I sure that I don't have some level of sugar or sweetness?" Which I took to, is there not some level of, in my opinion, I believe he was talking about there not some type of level of homosexual attraction, possibly same-sex attraction, or there's not some type of gayness or whatever. You may be construed. I know that white supremacists use the word sweet to denote people who sometimes can be into same-sex relationships or that type of activity. I took the opportunity to...
mention Delectable Negro.
To practice in my code. Yes, exactly. I took that opportunity to ignore. I have a very short fuse when it comes to I don't like to use that phrase. My patience, my level of patience can be very low, and I like to escalate things quickly with them because I feel that it's of course the thing that we want to do as victims, but of course it's not correct. It only would lead to problems. We need to comply and get away from them as soon as possible. I ignored and I walked off. But the fact that he thought it was acceptable to make that type of comment, it's just a continued torture, tacky, trashy, terroristic behavior that occurs when showing, specifically when Black people are showing levels of self-respect, non-white people are showing self-respect. That goes, I have had several instances, and I've shared with many other non-white people, of not opening doors on my day-to-day, on my while working for white people, white women, white children, not picking up items that are dropped by white children, not opening doors. And the visceral reactions that I have received have only proven to me that whenever a non-white person, specifically a Black male, some would argue the maximum security prison victims of white supremacy, when they show levels of white people, regardless of age, sex, or orientation, will respond viscerally with a punitive, I can't stand you, and I want to find a way to harm you as soon as possible. That has been my conclusion that I have come to. The second and final thought that I have regarding my experience while being quote-unquote self-employed is it's been almost 1 year since I've left the quote-unquote plantation, the corporate plantation. It's been a little less than 2 years. My attempted spouse has also left the corporate world. We both generated a substantial income. She made more than six figures. I was close to six figures. You know, that is some type of, you know, perceived status symbol in the world of the white dominators and the racists. We lived rather comfortably in their disgusting world. And we have noticed now that after her 2 years and my year, we run rather unapologetically non-white Black businesses. We limit our interactions with white people. In fact, she owns a yoga studio, and she limits her using white substitute teachers. She limits that. And she also pays her Black substitute teachers more than she pays her white substitute teachers at her yoga studio, which I believe is an extreme example of Black self-respect. And it was something that touched me as exemplary behavior for paying her Black teachers more than she pays her white teachers. But we have noticed that as far as the area of activity known as economics, we have not seen the same benefits. As been stated earlier, you know, revolutionary new revolution is not profitable. You know, you can't profit off a revolution and showing Black level self-respect. But we take it as just the system working on us. When you leave the plantation, just like 150 years ago, you were to be made to feel as if you will be unsuccessful and that there's no world outside of the quote-unquote corporate plantation. I don't have anything wrong with jobs or people working. I don't. But I know psychologically on the damage that it inflicted on myself and my attempted spouse. And while we climbed the quote-unquote corporate ladder, we were just subjected to more and more racist terrorism. So I just wanted to share those two things, that my observations that I have noticed in under the system. We have purchased a house recently, and we're trying to get out from under the dominators paying rent to these devils. So we are attempting to do that, and the struggles that have become with that have really shown us how when you show Black self-respect, you will likely be punished, and you must prepare for that. Thank you. I'll take my call offline.
Wow. That is amazing. Folks have had lots of, I think, lots of great illustrations of Black self-respect and being codified today. Your wife, that is, I am astounded in a very pleasant way in her paying her Black employees more than the white workers. That is phenomenal. A pluses to your wife. That is outstanding. I was snickering and interrupted. This is our narrator for Delectable Negro, which we just finished, and the profundity of that book, the being told on your job you have a little sweetness in you. That's the exact sort of thing that the delectable Negro interrogates. Like, that could have been a chapter in the book we just read, yes?
Definitely, definitely. And it's not just, it's not one-off. It occurs almost once a week. There's an advance by generally males, white, because I live around, you know, I work around white males. And after reading that book, it is apparent that they are bent on putting that thought into black males. And it's on, you can't make a mistake. It's there.
Profound. I would have never even thought of it in that way, but that book, and I mean, our narrator labored through it. It did a brilliant job, but, oops, sorry about that. One second. Incredible. Making intercom announcements at the library. Lengthy intercom announcements. But yeah, I would have never thought about it before reading that book, that consumption of black people, and particularly that book talking about exactly what you just said, white male consumption, homoerotic consumption of black male bodies, that pops up in the workplace all the time. I think this was last year, we had black males calling in and talking about how they would have white guys on their job come and just with their proximity and stand really, really close to them and tell jokes where I'm clearly in your personal space and I'm just standing there. You're supposed to be comfortable with that and laugh and joke with him while I come in your personal space and even, you know, will touch you, put my arm on you, that same type of thing. Consumption. I think that happens to a lot of black folks on the job. Got to have a code about that, too. Other folks that we have not heard from, do you all have commentary?
Hi, Gus.
Stacy in the UK with us. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, and hello to all the callers. Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate the last caller's wife on the basically how she's paying her workers. I think that's amazing. And also to congratulate the postal worker on her progress made, particularly in not responding to the provocation of the her colleague, not her manager. I've had a similar situation this week, which I won't go into, but where a manager is just, you know, coming up to my desk and provoking me by just asking me about work, which is not due on that day. And it feels good when you don't react, particularly if you're used to reacting. So she didn't get the reaction out of me, so she had to walk away. And I was laughing in my head. And what I did was just make a note of the behaviour as soon as she stepped away from my desk and emailed myself home. So, it just felt good. It feels good when you are improving on your codification. Gus, I was going to ask if you're going to play the audio or how you wanted to do that.
Absolutely. I have it all queued up and ready to roll. I wanted to make sure I got... did we miss any callers? Any callers that we've missed completely before we have a pre-recorded audio from Stacy? I guess this was the insurance policy because it's, see if I can do my math correctly. So it's, I believe, a little after 2 a.m. for Stacy. Right on. So this is our insurance policy in case she fell asleep or what have you. But she gives her workplace racism update that she shared with us a couple weeks ago. Is anybody that we missed completely? That's with us that we have not heard from at all.
Hello, may I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, Gus and Cal's listeners. I came in kind of late, so sorry about that. My apologies. But this is Nikki from Dallas. I've called in a couple of weeks now. Excuse me. I just wanted to actually try to give some advice. I know you don't like metaphors, Gus, but I literally I have fallen off the code ladder this week. So I'm very grateful for having the opportunity to call in to kind of refocus my attention on what I'm supposed to be doing in the workplace. But I wanted to get the opinion of the other listeners about the word girl. I've been called that twice in the last couple of weeks. Actually, that one incident today, as some of you may or may not know, my black coworker quit her position with the company that I worked at, which is a major film company, and they put her accounts on me. So most of the territories that I'm working now is the southeastern territory, and most of these people are what you would consider a mom and pop theater owners. And a lady today, I would assume is a white woman, called in and said, "Oh, so you're my new girl now." And I kind of had to take a pause back, and I'm like, I didn't know. My mind was racing like 1,000 miles per hour as to how to say something without being what would be considered rude. So I just basically came up with saying, "Oh, no, I'm your new coordinator." And she was like, "Oh, okay." So I wanted to see if there was a better way to address that, because I'm pretty sure it's probably going to come up again, because a lot of the people that I speak with are white males, and that's just how they treat not only me as a black woman, but I've noticed that the other white females in the office as well. And now that I look at things from a different perspective, I've noticed that about 97% of the people that work for the company are white. And it's like, wow, there's no people of color in the sales force, which are the people who actually go out and sell the film to the theaters. So there's no representation on that level of the company. But like I stated before, I just wanted to get others' opinion on how to best say to someone that you don't want to be called girl. And with that, I'll mute my line.
Any of our black female listeners that are on the line have suggestions?
I guess.
Stacey in London.
I thought the response was perfect. It didn't sound rude to me. It was, I just thought that was a perfect response. However, I would also say don't react to it all the time as well, particularly if you know that that is just the habit of those individuals. I didn't see anything wrong with the response, because it was an appropriate correction. It didn't sound rude. The person got the message. I mean, I've had people do that to me, whether it's the word girl or babe, as people like to use the word people like to use in the UK, or talk to me in a way which implies that I'm a lot younger. And to be honest, most people don't realise my age. So I do have that. The fact is, I do look a lot younger, and most people, if they do find out my age, are quite surprised. So it's particularly annoying, because I do have younger people who seem to talk to me as if they're years older. However, there are people who just are rude and racist. But I tend not to respond as much. I thought the response was perfect, actually.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to thank Nikki for that question, because I faced that question I faced that being called a girl on my job as well. And I'm in Dallas as well. And a lot of times it comes across as this Southern thing, like, "Hey, girl," "Hey, this," "Hey, girl, good morning." And it gnaws at my nerves so bad, because I don't recall hearing her call other white females in the office girl. So, and I did not know how to respond to that. So I want to thank you, Stacey, for responding to that question, because it was becoming quite annoying, because I hear it quite often and it irritates me. So I thank you for responding to that, because you saying that I don't have to respond, I don't have to address it, will help me with my code a little bit better. So thank you, Nikki. Thank you, Stacey. And I'll mute my line.
Can I be heard?
We can hear you. Hang tight. Are there any other black females? Oh, I'm hearing speakerphone. Yikes. No speakerphone if we can help.
May I be heard? Please.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello. I do also want to agree with the comment about being called girl. I've actually been called girl by both men and women and other things, of course. I just want to say really quick is that I'm a black female who has a white coworker always touching my breast. So I actually, at first, I have been doing really well with just avoiding her. I had to go into the office and go to a meeting, and I would see her, and she would see, we would kind of make eye contact, but I would just, you know, just continue with where I was going, wouldn't say anything to her. She tried to reach out to me outside of work. I just ignored it. Reached out to me within the little work, because we have basically an instant message type of system at work. I saw that, like, the first part of the message, it wasn't work-related, so I just ignored it. So she had been asking, a non-white female that I kind of talked to inside of work a little bit and outside of work. She had been asking her about me, and, like, she was worried about me and this, that, and the other. And I felt bad because I didn't want to get the non-white female brought into it. But she didn't feel bad about it. But I actually had to go in for a meeting because I work at home. I had to go inside for a meeting, and the female, the white woman, made sure to stop me, and she just had to ask me a question. She had to whisper it in my ear, and it just completely caught me off guard. So I heard, I listened to it. It was about, like, some benefits, and I was thinking to myself, it's like, you could have asked anyone else, but she made it her mission to say something to me. So it was just the pathology of these people. And then the other thing that I wanted to say, the same non-white female that I was telling you about, that the white female was asking about me. She's being terrorized by our boss. She's been wanting to work from home, and he keeps making up reasons why she can't work from home as well. And she actually just got written up. And so that's basically my workplace racism for today. Thank you for listening.
That space issue, I just mentioned that. Yes, ma'am. I just said that. We were talking about it in the context of delectable Negro and white men doing it, but that is a trait of racists in general, just colonizing the space of black people. Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
I do apologize. I was trying to get in real quick with the mute button, but greetings, everybody. This is Amy. For the caller who asked about what to say when you're called girl, I think this would be a really good time to maybe ask a question. Like, right when it happens, go like, why do you do that? Like, why do you call me girl? And then they'll say whatever they say, oh, it's a Southern thing, or oh, it's just a colloquial term, or it's a term of endearment, or whatever it is that they're going to say. But just is then they can open up and you'd be like, oh, I don't really like that. Can you not do that? Please don't call me girl. Like, I think it's just a great way, instead of it feeling like someone is, they call you girl and you're like, don't do that. And then it might feel however it might feel, which I think is perfectly fine. But if you wanted to open it up, you could just ask, why do you do that? And then, like I said, they'll say what they say, and then you could respond. I think that's, like, in the future when it happens, just because it also tell you a little bit about maybe the impetus behind it. But that's all I wanted to say about that.
Always dig the question, Lane. Do we have any other black females who wanted to respond to suggestions, I guess, for how you'd respond to being called a girl, workplace setting? Any other black females that wanted to respond, or do we get them all? I'll assume we, making sure I didn't miss any of the folks who had a hand up. Any of the folks that I added more recently, black female callers, want to respond? Okay, I was, we do not have, the new folks are not black females. Let's see. Anyone that we have not heard from, or Mr. Steele, we haven't heard from you either. Did you all want to comment? Then we'll get Stacey's audio.
I would like to be told.
Go ahead, Mr. Steele.
Oh, I can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so this week has been really interesting on my particular plantation. Okay, so yesterday, and this just happened. Yesterday, I was in the process of putting together a pretty substantial deal. This is the biggest deal that I've had easily in my career as a corporate person. And I'm just constructing this email. I'm trying to think of the, you know, exact correct words to use for this particular communication. And my manager, who is, I guess, my manager's manager, I guess I'll say, walks up behind me and says, I think you seem like you'd be best off on a tarmac with brightly colored cones directing traffic, something like that. You know, it was something to that effect. And I don't know why he said this. I don't know what the joke was. I don't get it. I tell jokes for money, and for the life of me, I can't figure it out other than, hey, let's just be racist. And I said, oh, and right as I was typing this, constructing this email, right before then, they made a new rule on my job where you're not allowed to have headphones in. So I was not pleased at this particular moment. You know, my manager walked up to me, my immediate manager walked up to me. He told me that we are no longer allowed to have headphones. And I asked him, who made this rule? You know, where is this rule posted? And he said, oh, you don't believe me? Well, I can just send you the email. And he sent me the email, and it's from the VP. The VP says no headphones or something like that. And I said, when does this go into effect? And he said, immediately. So this was right after I took off my headphones. I was in the middle of listening to the Manning report, and I'm completely thrown off my workflow. My manager walks up to me and then says the remark about the cones, and to which it just was the perfect swirl. My codification fell off at this particular moment, and I responded, you know, I would be really good at directing air traffic if I was able to use my headphones. And that was my response. And apparently this was the worst response ever. This was incorrect because I went to work, I went to lunch after that, and I came back, and when I came back to my desk, my manager, immediate manager, calls me into a meeting, and he asks me if everything is okay, and what's wrong, and I said what? I said nothing is the matter, and then he said, well, you really took a snipe at the manager there. And I said, well, I don't know what he said to me. I didn't understand it other than, he just made a really rude snipe to me right in the middle of me putting together this deal. And I don't know if that is, according to the you know, company policy. I don't know if that's normal. Is that normal? And he said, yes, that is normal. You know, he likes to make jokes. You should have gotten that by now. And I say, well, I usually, you know, go to great lengths to, you know, hear his jokes and receive them well and not poorly. And this was the one time that I said anything in response to one of his pithy remarks. And I'm being called into a meeting about this. And I brought this to the attention of the person that, and I said, is it appropriate that he come up to me and make jokes about I don't know what? And he said, no. And we all noted that. And it seemed to me that a meeting was had about this. And, you know, they were discussing, my manager, you know, people are I'm noticing that people are saying my manager's name in hushed tones. And so everything I thought was okay. I come in to work the next day. And the first thing I don't really like to mess with my work email too much, but I came in and, lo and behold, my work has produced fruit, and I'm, you know, it's good news. So I'm reporting this good news, and I'm, you know, filling out a report, and the CEO walks up behind me, and, you know, he pulls on my hoodie, and, you know, I was wearing a hoodie that it had colors. It was just a really colorful hoodie, and he said, you know, we might need to bend colors next. And he has a British accent. So he's like, we might need to bend colors next. Hey, boys. And everybody sees this and everybody's just like, oh, you know, it's just hushed tone. Just like, what is going on? And my codification, you know, kind of eluded me at this moment. I said, excuse me? Because I didn't understand why he's saying this. I don't understand what is going on. I just said, excuse me. And what was that? And, you know, I don't think he heard it because he kept it moving. And, you know, my boss or my manager pulls me aside and says to me, you know, is everything cool? Is everything all right? And I'm just like, yeah, everything is fine. I just, you know, we're about to make a lot of money here. You know, I'm trying to focus on the job. And he's just like, well, you're not supposed to snipe. You're not supposed to back talk to management or, you know, your superiors. And then he said to me, you know, you're kind of aggressive. And I said, excuse me, did I raise my voice? He said, no. I said, did I stamp my feet? I said, no. Did I use profane language? No. Was my inflection incorrect? He said, no. And he said, well, you know, it's just kind of aggressive. And, you know, and he was using words like aggressive and what is that? That was the one that stuck out to me. And I said, you know, Mike, this same CEO, he said to me that my shirt with birds on it was aggressive. You know, birds and flowers was aggressive. Then he said that he also called me Sporty Spice. And he's like, yeah, I know, you know, the guy's kind of a, you know, he's just like, he's kind of a, you know, a jerk. And, you know, he calls me the C word all the time. And, you know, we share drinking stories and this, that, and the other. And it's all cool. And then another manager takes me out to lunch.
30 seconds.
You know, he invites me out to lunch. Sorry. It takes me out to lunch. Tells me that everything that, is, you know, is happening is okay. You know, assures that I'm cool with it, I guess. And then, you know, we're going back and we're making more money. But I'm just at a loss because I'm not cool with what's happening here. I'm documenting everything, and I'm trying to remain codified, and I don't know how I'm being aggressive. They can't tell me what it is that, you know, is so aggressive. So I don't know. I think a work is being done on me.
That's what it sounds like. And that's one thing that I would encourage all non-white people to be very aware of on these jobs. I know Mr. Fuller has spoken about this before as well. Whites can change the policy on your job in like the next 30 seconds. They can just go get the most powerful white people there. That's another reason why Mr. Fuller encourages the Constitution so much, is because they can change those policies and procedures on your job much easier than the Constitution. I think that's one of the reasons I've heard him elaborate on before. But I mean, and I have had, I can talk about this from my own personal work experience as well. I've been on jobs, more than one, in fact, where it was something arbitrary. I think it was wearing hats. I was not the only person that wore. There were white people that wore hats on the job. And the manager came around and was like, oh, that's such a great hat. And it was like, literally, how can we mess over the Negro? Yes, we will outlaw hats. In the bed. And literally, I had white people who never even came to my area where I work, who came to my section, because, oh, man, did you hear? They're changing the rules. No hats anymore. Wow, what are you going to do? Like, they will do this sort of thing. And, yes, I think racists are vindictive enough that, yes, they can find one black person or two black people if they see that it's something just that they do. Yes, if it's headphones, hats, if it's, you know, these specific type of pants you can't wear anymore, yes, and just be prepared that that sort of thing could happen on your job, like I said, in the next 5 seconds, because that's what racism and white supremacy means. Now, hang on one sec, because we have other people that haven't been able to share at all. Folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have commentary, feel free.
Can I be heard? Hello?
Heard both of you.
You hearing two people?
I heard both of you.
Oh, there's the other person. Okay, I'm going to go ahead. I heard say that. Hey, Gus, was this, I saw on Facebook that you said this was the broadcast for talking about your personal handbook from work. Was this that broadcast?
Can you say that one more time, please?
Oh, I saw on Facebook, maybe I read it incorrectly, but was this the broadcast where you encouraged us to talk about what we might find in our personal handbooks at work?
Absolutely. I say that every time for workplace racism.
Okay. I did go through my handbook today. It's been a while since I've gone through it, but I did highlight two things from it. So the first one is about handling complaints. This one is referring specifically to customers that might come in to the building. It says, permitting people who are angry to vent their anger will many times solve the problem. Giving citizens a chance to get their complaints voiced will help them feel better and thus allow them to be more responsive to the answers the county subsequently provides. Now, this is specifically for public citizens that come into the county where I work. I didn't see this specific policy necessarily for county employees. I wonder if anyone else had that kind of rule in their employee handbook. And then the second one I highlighted from my manual is the dress code. County employees are expected to dress in a manner appropriate and conducive to the performance of their particular jobs. It shall be the responsibility of the department director and or division manager to ensure that employees under his or her supervision dress in a safe, efficient and professional manner so as to project a positive professional image for Greenville County. Now, in the dress code, it doesn't say anything about how people should specifically dress and what they should not do. But I remember about a year ago, I came in without a collar shirt and my manager told me not to do that again. Though there are other people who work in the county who come to work with regular t-shirts and jeans and a whole bunch of other stuff. Not that they're dressed inappropriately, but, you know, they don't necessarily or always have on collar shirts. I just thought that was very interesting. But I didn't feel that was a thing to bring it to my manager at the time, so I let that one go. But I did have a situation with my manager a couple months ago. I did email this, but I'm finally going to go ahead and just read it. On Wednesday, January 5th, 2017, I asked my manager, could I flex the rest of my workday for a doctor's appointment? The extra flex hours, 3 hours, came from working overtime for 8 days over the course of 3 weeks back in October 2016. Now, there are three people in my department at work, including myself, the transit planner, the transportation planner manager, my boss, and the transportation planner. On the third Friday of the first week, on the third Friday of the 3 weeks of overtime work, the transportation planner was allowed to flex 3 hours, leaving 3 hours earlier than usual. She didn't have to put in her time card or anything of the sort. My manager had already taken annual leave for the entirety of the same day. Just becoming director, the director decreed that there must be one person from the transportation planning department in attendance at all times during the work week. I was told I would be allowed to flex in the future by my manager. When employees request vacation or sick leave, they must be accounted for on their time card. But for this occasion, it didn't need to be reported. Matter of fact, the director gave the department a half day off the day before Thanksgiving and Christmas, and no one had to record anything on their time cards. In the beginning of November, an email came from the HR department acknowledging changes in federal law about overtime pay. Because of our current pay, me and the other transportation planner, we fall under the rule change for overtime, which lifted the salary threshold below $47,476 annually for $913 a week. It was unfortuitous that this change didn't happen in time for all of the overtime work during the 3 weeks in October 2016. But at the end of the month, the new law change was stayed by the federal court and indefinitely. Our manager told us to keep track of the overtime we worked from when the law came down so that when the stay is lifted, we can be paid retroactively. Fast forward to the future, on Wednesday, January 5th, 2017, I asked my manager, can I flex the last 3 hours of my day for a doctor's appointment? Initially, he didn't remember. Then I was able to refresh his memory with the help of the transportation planner. Before I went to speak to the transportation planner, I'd spoken with her before because I had forgotten when she got to flex. She looked like a deer caught in headlights when we came to her office door. After remembering, my manager said he would ask the assistant county administrator because the director was out for the week. After initially asking the assistant county administrator if I could flex for the day, my manager told me it was far too late for me to flex overtime hours given to me back in October. Now, when I was initially told I would be able to flex in the future, I was not told when. So I figured I'd save it for when I needed it. I wasn't told I must flex the next week or any deadline. At this point, my manager returned with the assistant administrator's decision, which was no. My manager then began to explain why I could not flex like I was told I could back in October. His reasons included, when you flex, you must flex within the same work week or following work week. Two, since the federal law for overtime was stayed, we cannot allow you to flex. Three, if the stay on the federal law for overtime was lifted, you would be allowed to flex. As we continue the discussion, I would ask my manager, was it correct that the transportation planner was allowed to flex? But I wasn't. The manager said yes because she did it immediately. I asked my manager, is it correct that I can't flex today because the federal law is stayed? My manager said yes, but I would be able to if the federal overtime law was not stayed. While talking with my manager, I did my best to make sure the word fair did not leave my lips. Although it did slip once, I quickly corrected it to correct. While speaking to my manager, I can feel myself swelling up like I was about to cry over how unjust the situation was, but I managed to keep my composure. After a while, I realized that I shouldn't be trying to engage in a logical conversation with my manager over the incorrectness of the situation. So at that point, I switched tactics and told my manager that if I can't flex, fine, but I wanted it in writing. For a second, my manager had this look of shock on his face, like, I don't know what to do. At that point, he decided to go back to the assistant county administrator to tell her that I wanted their decision in writing. A minute later, my manager came back and told me that I would be allowed to flex for the day, but added, for now on, flexing must be taken within the same work period of, or the next. And that's my black self-respect moment right there. And the last thing I will bring up is that currently I am studying for something called a planning certificate. It's the professional certification for urban planners. And the testing material, includes urban planning, history, law, ethics, infrastructure, housing, etc. The material I find most interesting is the laws and federal programs, especially in housing, in the housing section of the study material. So, for example, this one law keeps coming up, the National Housing Act. It was passed in 1934, 37, 49, 54, 59, and I think 68 as well, too. You know, there's this impression that federal laws passed is made to address social deficiencies, but the fact that the same law has been passed so many times proves, if anything, the laws made to address issues are made to reinforce the current deficiencies. The federal government is anything but inept. When white people want something done, it happens. When it was time to settle the West, they gave white people land for development via the Homestead Act of 1862. When water needed to be diverted to the arid states, this was done via the U.S. Reclamation Act of 1902. When white people wanted to look like they were dealing with racism, they passed the same laws over and over.
30 seconds.
But when they looked to see if the, I'm sorry, what?
If you can finish it up in about 30 seconds.
That I can do. When white people wanted to look like they were dealing with, I'm sorry for that part, but when they looked to see if the laws was working or as intended, they needed only look at the plight of black people, no substantial change, mission accomplished. Every housing act had a component of slum clearance or urban renewal, but because of the way it targeted black neighborhoods, James Baldwin called it Negro removal. Local authorities used the program as a legal means to evict poor residents in favor of more affluent residents in process of gentrification. One writer, John McCurry, asserted that in the case of the section of Cabrini Green, the Chicago residents were forced out for HOPE 5 as a program for redevelopment by armed police. And I will cut my mic right there.
Wow. You all have been downright inspirational today with a variety of different acts of black self-respect, looking out for other black people or trying to give constructive information to other black colleagues and standing up for yourself, asking for things in writing. I think Emmy mentioned that last week, or it might not have been last week, recently, about getting a written retraction if you are falsely accused for something, if you're going to be denied the same opportunities that were afforded to other white coworkers. Well, let's get that in writing. That I'm being denied and why I'm being denied. That's why I've said consistently documenting things being written down. Racist, a lot of times, they respond differently. Things seem much more serious, that can have much greater ramifications once we start documenting and being serious about things that are happening here. And all you did there was make a request to get it in writing, and things worked out well. That just the power of things being in writing and the power of asking questions, being informed about your policy and procedure. I think that came up twice with the flexing option. And then, as I said, whites can change the laws. And then with the dress code thing again, but just being informed about policy and procedure, ask questions. Anybody, we'll get one more and then we'll get Stacy's audio segment. Is there another person that we missed completely? Anybody that we have not heard from at all?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, callers and listeners. I'm an engineer, young engineer, who was recently fired from my first full-time position. I just wanted to emphasize just the benefits of understanding the system and getting the information. I graduated with a substantial amount of debt from a predominantly white institution. I pretty much just wanted to get a job as soon as possible. And when I got to the job and saw how toxic the environment was, I pretty much dealt with it. I internalized a lot of things. Confidence was getting hit mentally. I was going through things. But as I, came across the work of, Dr. Francis Quest Welsing, Dr. Neve Fuller Jr., this program, I began to prepare myself for what I knew could inevitably happen, which was termination. And I lived well below my means. I focused on the financial aspect of what I was there for. It was the exchange of service for payment. And I was able to pay off pretty much all of my debt and save a substantial amount of money and be in a position now where I'm actually able to move in with a close relative and not have any, you know, rent payment and work on entrepreneur ventures that I've been thinking about and, you know, collect unemployment, of course. And I just want to say thank you for just, you know, giving me the information that will allow me to go through this, but come out and not have to be so financially, I guess, not have to rely so much on this institution financially at this moment, to have to jump straight onto another plantation or do something because I started taking out financial responsibilities that would essentially force me to have to work or try to find something as soon as possible. So I believe I was let go due to just an increase in my Black self-respect, became more codified, you know, stopped drinking at company parties, you know, stopped making people feel comfortable making racist jokes and things of that nature. I was literally the only Black person that I really worked with in the last 4 years outside of two other people who weren't in my company. So I just want to say thank you to Gus. Thank you to everyone who calls and gives this information. I definitely have a sense of well-being kind of coming over me as I, you know, don't have to go into this environment every day. And I do have some time to decompress and not have to worry about these financial binds that, you know, I may have should have gotten into just thinking that, oh, this job is great. Or, you know, I could be here for as long as I want. I believe I heard the firefighter gentleman say, any day could be your last. You know, they can come up with something at the drop of, you know, just any moment. And I pretty much worked like that and lived well below my means because I knew that that could happen. And for it to come to this point and to be as prepared as I was, you know, just financially to deal with this, you know, at this young age has been great. So thank you, Gus. Thank you for the program. Thank you, callers, listeners. And thanks to everyone who's contributed and written books on things that can empower us and just help us navigate the system that we are in and maintain, you know, just a sense of Black self-respect and mental health and mental well-being, as well as physical health and physical well-being. Thank you, guys. Leave my line.
Ashe. I do see there are other hands. We will get all the folks who dialed in with a hand up. But just I think time and energy has been mentioned a few times on the broadcast today, and hearing people saying that's one of the things to really be mindful about. Even if you, I think we had the caller who his wife is paying her Black workers more than her racist employees. We heard him mention that, hey, we had these great jobs and we're making, you know, lots of money and being terrorized all the while. Like, that's what racism, white supremacy is. And none of us, I don't care how great a position you have, how many coins they pay you, what your salary is, racism, white supremacy, they can take all that away in short order. So that is, in my view, that is phenomenal advice to really be in the habit of saving. That's not saying that you can't have, you know, if you make great funds, to not have nice things, but really we want to be on the side of saving, that we are at war. I think when whites, when they're waging their battles and conflicts, they have military spending, or excuse me, you have wartime spending. And then you have, once all that's done, where you can be much more liberal with your spending. We should take the same approach. Even if you are making great coins now, racists can change that up very, very quickly. And they tend to try to encourage us when they do allow us to make a little bit of money to have really extravagant spending habits, so that we're spending and not saving, so that then we'll be in a real bind when they say, okay, I think we've allowed them to have this about as long as we're going to tell them to give this job to my cousin now. And, you know, we're going to laugh as we kick them out of the office. Much easier to deal with that transition when you have saved your coins. Get to the audio from Stacy in the UK. This is, again, following up what she shared before about being falsely accused by this racist on her job. And so this is the update on what's been happening with the situation. I thought you'll hear some of just the phrasing, how this is talked about. This is, again, in the UK. I think it's substantially different than the way this is generally talked about and dealt with in the States or really anywhere else that I've heard in the world. we'll get feedback once all this is done. Context of white supremacy, Stacey in the UK discussing her experience with workplace racism.
Okay, so hello everyone, this is Stacey from the UK, and I had relayed a situation that I was experiencing probably about 2 weeks ago, where a junior member staff had alleged that I had shouted at him, and at that time I was told that the matter was serious and that he had a witness. When I heard it, I said, well, he will need to make it formal, given that I had been raising issues about his behaviour for some time and I hadn't been provided with his job description, and therefore, rather than just have an accusation made against me, that I wanted it investigated. After I'd done so, that was presented to me by his line manager. After they received that response from me, all of a sudden it was being taken less seriously, and they, rather than wanting to discuss his allegation, wanted to discuss my original query about his job description. So 2 weeks ago, the matter was finally raised by initially my former line manager and then my head of team before she was going on holiday. But I'd made it clear that he should either formalise his complaint or retract in writing. And she was going away to discuss it with him because as far as she was aware, he wasn't actually wanting to make a formal complaint. But I was insisting that there were issues to do with my reputation as well. So, as I said, she was going away on holiday, so I wasn't really expecting any follow-up until this week. However, last week, I was pulled into a meeting by my current line manager. Now, she actually claimed that she wasn't made aware of it until the week before, but because I wasn't in the office very much, she didn't have a chance to discuss the matter with me. It had been brought to her again by former line manager, who was concerned that there hadn't been any resolution to the situation, and she had also discussed the matter with the person who claimed that it shouted at him, and also his line manager, and they all felt that it hadn't been resolved, and that this individual, not only was he claiming that I had shouted at him, but in fact it had happened on more than, not that it, he had shouted. Sorry, that I chatted to him on more than one occasion, but that, you know, he had been made to feel uncomfortable about by the way I had been speaking to him, and it was about my communication style, and she, you know, is very concerned and wants the team to be highly productive, and therefore, you know, it's about having an understanding of the relationships of people in the team, and being clear about how we communicate, because we can all get frustrated. It's a highly pressurized environment, and we'd all been given training about, you know, how it can make people feel, and she doesn't want it to ever be the case that somebody feels that they don't even want to come into the office because they're worried about how they're being treated. So I asked her for clarification on what he was actually claiming, particularly around the fact that now it had been increased from one accusation to now several, and she was actually asking me to explain what had taken place, my understanding of the issue, the original complaint, and what did I think I could do differently. So again, you know, I probed it and said, well, I am actually concerned that it's being presented to me as factual, that his accusation is factual, but that also now it's extending to more than one situation. And then I actually told her that I'd already discussed it with the head of team, who actually had already brought the matter to me. She claimed she wasn't aware of that. I said, well, you know, it was very interesting that communication is being raised with me when I've now had four managers raise a complaint, now several complaints with me, yet this individual has not even made a formal complaint. But I'm being asked to run through what I could have done differently, etc., etc., and being told that I'm now making somebody feel that they don't want to come into the office. So I just got to the point where I said to end the meeting, you know, I'd already made clear the position with the head of the team. Therefore, the fact that it is now being raised again means that it's now a formal issue as far as I'm concerned. I said, oh, no, you know, well, we're told that we should try and address these things at team level. We don't need to make these things formal. I said, no, it's formal. He's not going to make accusations against me. And it's been presented to me as if what he's saying is factual and that it doesn't only affect him, it affects my reputation. She'd also, in the discussion, said to me that how she wanted to take the team and the wider team and discuss roles and responsibilities. And I think, as I reminded everyone when I first raised the matter, this individual, how this initially came to a head was that he had come to me, I'd asked him to do something in a one-to-one meeting. He told me that he was no longer doing things that I had wanted him to do because he is being developed. So I'd said to him, okay, I need to discuss it with his manager because no one had actually, discussed anything with me. And when I did raise it, I also had requested his JD, and it had literally been 12 months of me requesting this person's job description. So all of a sudden now this whole thing is being tied up into his roles and responsibilities, and she wants to take a team away to discuss it. Is everything working as it should be? And, you know, as far as she's concerned, she hasn't actually seen anything which sets out what he should be doing, etc., etc. So I asked her to clarify whether she's actually saying that she has not seen his responsibilities, and she didn't. I said, are you actually suggesting left total? Okay. Basically, making further accusations about my performance, saying that the job description had not been set out, and it had been agreed with her, his line manager, and my former line manager. So it's just a way of them being quite slick and trying to represent the matter as a performance issue with me, of mine, rather than actually the fact that they had not presented his job description to me and had been completely undermining me throughout this whole process. My head of team is now back in the office. I had sent her the notes of the meeting, and she has been giving me the cold shoulder for the whole week. I've since had a meeting with my line manager, who's now told me that this individual is considering his options.
Meaning what?
Meaning, the interesting thing is that I had said it was formal. However, and that was how it was, how it was like my line manager, my head of team before she went on leave, was that she was going to discuss with him whether he wanted to make it formal, and that I'd asked for a written retraction. So he was considering his options, but the way it was presented to me yesterday was that issue. It wasn't even a complaint or anything. It was just that issue with this member of staff. Has been discussed, and he's considering his options. So my request that it's formalized seems to have been disregarded.
That is I'm curious to know if he has other options besides writing a formal written retraction that he falsely accused you, or whatever, you know, it needs to say in that form, or, you know, he wants to make some sort of formal procedure to formally accuse you or charge you with having, I don't know, been discourteous to him or shouting at whatever he's saying he did, or if he has other options. Does he have other choices than those two? Those two options on the table.
Not as far as I'm aware. I did
question, as I say, the procedure that they seem to be taking, which he had told me was, my line manager had actually said to me, it was quite confusing how things are handled by the organisation, which is just a load of nonsense. But you see, the interesting thing is they were saying he felt that I had made him feel uncomfortable. It's about my communication style. And when we're trained on diversity and harassment and bullying, that and I think she's confusing a few policy areas, but she is stating that if a person feels that they are, the procedure, the policy is sometimes that if a person feels harassed, then they're being harassed. We should accept that they are feeling harassed, etc. However, the way the matter was presented to me in the beginning is that he has a witness to me shouting at him. That's not a feeling. That's a direct accusation with a witness. A witness can't witness his feelings. That's an accusation. So they're being quite slick and trying to move away from me being able to challenge it. But I insisted at that time that it needs to be addressed formally. So they're playing games, basically.
Practicing racism. I'll probably cut it right there. Context of white supremacy, practicing racism, indeed. The end portion, I am fascinated, folks in the States or anywhere else in the world, really. I don't think I've ever heard of a workplace policy where the formal written procedure is if someone feels that they have been slighted or they feel offended, then that is evidence enough. We don't need, this doesn't have to be something where it's substantiated, where, you know, 3, 4, 10 people saw this person yell at you or being hostile, or you cursed at him or said something that's just flagrantly rude and vile, where it can just be they felt that they were being treated discourteously, and that is enough for them to move and feel that this needs to be addressed in some sort of way, maybe even punitively. I've never heard of that in my life, anywhere, in a work situation. That was one. Yes, hang on one side. I wanted to see if folks had any responses, and then if you want to add anything, Stacey, we can add on. Do folks have...
Just to clarify my last point, actually.
Is this going to be something quick?
Yeah. It was just because since we recorded that session, I logged into my office and read the policy. Mm. So it's as I said, if the person feels that they're being harassed, managers are expected to accept that that's how they feel. However, they are required to undertake an investigation. So, in other words, it shouldn't be that manager just then responds and says that the individual is being truthful, because anybody could make up a situation. They are required to carry out an investigation, and that hasn't been done in this case, clearly. So that's just what I wanted to add.
I see. Yeah, that practicing racism, white supremacy. We do not have an investigation, and we still do not have the duties, which I think is been a problem stateside as well, where people, even for non-white people, somehow we cannot get what are your formal duties for this job. We still cannot get that information for the racist accuser that Stacey is dealing with in the UK. Do folks have any commentary, questions based on, I guess this is ongoing now, what she shared with us over the past few weeks now? No, we missed folks. If folks want to ponder, if they don't have any questions, or if they just have their own situations that they want to share as well, feel free. I cannot imagine that even being in a policy procedure manual here in the States, where even to get something started for an investigation, if this person feels that they have been mistreated, that's grounds enough just on the basis of how they feel. I don't think I've ever seen that or heard it discussed that way in a workplace setting. That seems like it would just be all day chaos if that was going to be. And I could see whites doing a lot of clowning, exactly the type of situation that Stacey's going through. I think they would get on that big time if the bar was set that low for what can happen in a workplace setting. Are there other callers that we missed completely? If you had commentary for Stacy, that's great. If you have your own situation that you would like to discuss, feel free. I know there are folks that we've still missed. If you have a hand up, commentary you would like to share and we have not heard from you, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, this is a caller from Florida. I was calling about a situation that had happened at my place of work yesterday. As I was coming in, I pretty much did a mid-shift, so I wasn't an active manager on duty or on the floor. But as I was reporting to work, a situation had came up with a customer in our pharmacy department. I was going into a meeting in the back office, and the pharmacy representative, the manager back there, had shortly came in as we were working on some stuff in the back, and basically was explaining to my store manager that they had an emergency, that this white male, a normal customer, he looked like a biker of some sort, I guess got upset because his prescriptions, there was some issue in disputing with the insurance on either what was supposed to be covered or whatever the case may have been. Nonetheless, the prescriptions weren't ready by the time he got there. I did note as I was passing him down the aisle, he looked very disgruntled, like, you know, he could kill somebody. Well, make a long story short, basically when he had the confrontation with pharmacy manager, he threatened to come back and kill everybody in the pharmacy department. So the pharmacy manager, shortly after the guy had left, he came and spoke with us, and my store manager, black female, she called the, you know, because they didn't know whether or not he was, you know, just blown off the top or just, you know, serious, but the pharmacy manager took it as serious. And so the store manager said, well, if you feel that, you know, it's going to be an issue, call the police. So that way, by the time if he does come back, or if he comes back, then they're going to meet him, you know, pretty much at the spot that he's going to land. So true to form, luckily our location is literally right next to Marion County's sheriff's office. So it was like 30 seconds they were there. So they were all dispatched throughout the store waiting for this customer to come back. And sure enough, he came back. And we were in the stock room by then. And so they had paid for the store manager to meet in pharmacy. So basically they had to play it off as if it just so happened to be that these officers were there. Because I could hear him saying, well, are they here for me or something like that? And they were trying to, you know, play it off as this, oh, no, we just happen to be here because they allowed her to approach the customer when he came in because he's a regular and they know him. And basically she was she served him with no trespassing thing or whatnot. Where he's basically banned from coming to the store, and I believe that's effective for a whole entire year. And he was trying to plead with her, trying to explain, oh, he's off his medication and this, that, and the other. You know, just making all these abundance of excuses. And, you know, the store manager later told me, she said, the police officers thought that she was going to stand down and, you know, walk away from, you know, enforcing whatever. And so basically, you know, she basically told him that, you know, he was banned from the store for a year, that she wanted to serve him with the no trespassing
thing and told the officers, you know, she spoke with him for a while. But like I said, he was just trying to make all these excuses. Then he was saying that he had ran out of his medication and that he was, you know, off his medication and he just blah, 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 blah. So once they escorted him out of the store, they said he did ask, could his wife come in? She said, no problem. You know, she doesn't have a warrant against her no trespassing warrant against her. You could send her in and this, that, and the other. But he is not allowed to come into the store location anymore. So they escorted him out and this, that, and the other. So she was talking to everybody, and she later came and was talking to me about the situation because, you know, customers and people was trying to ask me what was going on, and I was just trying to say, oh, no, you know, people was trying to say, well, was he caught stealing or this, that, and the other, and I was like, you know, I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to cause mass panic, and this was right before I even knew what had happened in California. So I had no idea because I hadn't been watching too much of the local and national news. So she came later on and was talking to me and basically was telling me, you know, what they were talking about in depth. But then she let me know that one of the police officers, after they had escorted him out, had pulled her aside and basically, you know, commended her and standing by enforcing this no trespassing warrant or whatever it is. And basically they went on to tell her that they know the respondent officers, they don't know him personally, but when they ran his information in their system, that they know of him. Sheriff's Department knows of him because they've had to be dispatched out to his place of residence on a number of occasions. And the last time that they had to go out there was because he was threatening to kill himself and kill his family and kill himself by suicide by cop. And he said, you know, whatever his excuse is, like, I mean, either he needs to just really sit down with somebody or get with a family member or whatnot and get the help that he needs. But again, we're talking about a white person. But the whole point is that
30 seconds?
You know, he wanted... Oh, I'm sorry. So, basically, I was just emphasizing the fact that he wanted her to have sympathy for him and his situation when we know that we're dealing with psychopaths. And I'll meet mine.
Wow. Even white people who have threatened mass violence, we're supposed to sympathize and feel sorry that he just missed a few medication doses. It's been my experience when you have repeat offenders. One second. Sorry about that. Wackiness. Incredible. They are doing all kinds of intercom announcements for the day. That is standard operating procedure. You'll see that in work environments on a regular basis. You'll see that across the board in the system of racism, white supremacy, where white people are violating rules, sometimes committing criminal acts, as in this case, making terroristic threats. And the rules are just not, you know, evenly applied. Not participating in all of that. Observing, just noting that this had taken place, and even that this guy is an extensive criminal. Apparently, I think black people in similar situations have been, you know, shot and given far more punitive action than just a 1 year. They didn't even give him a lifetime ban from the store, a 1 year bar or what have you. Did we miss anybody? Any folks that have a hand up that we have not heard from at all have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, yes. I'm a long-time listener, a first-time caller. And I work in childcare, ages 5 to 12 years old. And dealt with a situation where I have this young boy. He's about 7 years old, and he's a heavily melanated young boy. I would say maybe two shades darker than the actor Isaiah Washington. And I have these racist white children who are zeroing in on him. I had one boy who's 8 years old who told him that he's his emotional primate. And I have another little girl who's 8, tell him because he touched her handheld gaming system that now she has to get a whole new one because he touched it. And I had another little boy who tells him that his mom says he cannot play with him because he's dirty. So today he broke down and he was crying and he hid behind the classroom door and he's crying these, you know, these real tears. And I feel really bad for him. So I took the information down to the front desk where we're supposed to. And the front desk clerk is a non-white female black. And so she documents it and she puts it on my boss's desk. And so now I have to have a meeting tomorrow to explain to my boss, who is a white female, that these racist children are terrorizing this little boy. And my boss, her son, has a Confederate flag as his profile pic on Facebook. So now I have to go to her and have her basically waste my time. Because I know actions are going to be taken against, you know, none of these little racist kids. And the same boy who went to told the little boy, the heavily melanated boy, that my parents told me that I can't play with you because you're dirty. Today, my daughter attends the same daycare that I work at. So she's in my classroom because she's 7 and he's 8. And so my daughter's making a card for me. So she's writing on the card, I love you, mommy. You're the best mom in the world. So she's drawing a flower. And I call her over to my desk to talk to her about something. And he writes on her paper while she's not looking. He puts not, N-O-T, in the, you know, the flower. So it's basically saying, you know, you're the best mommy in the world. He puts not. So she brings it over to me. And she's like, Mom, you know, look what he did. So I said, okay, you know, I'll talk to his mom about it. So I took the paper and I put it to the side. So he gets another piece of paper and he writes in red crayon, I will kill you myself. And so I say, okay, take both of the papers. His mom comes in to pick him up maybe 20 minutes later. So I take it over to his mom and I said, well, I've been having trouble, with him today. And his mom is, I don't want to say she's giving me the cold shoulder, but she's not really interested in what I'm saying. So she's, like, basically telling her son, you know, come on, let's go. So I kind of cut her off from leaving. So I stand, beside her, and I'm holding these two papers up. So I'm explaining to her what's happening. So she looks at the paper where it says, I will kill you myself. And she said, well, why did you do that? He said, well, I find it funny. So she said, well, obviously, you know, they don't find it funny. And you spelled myself wrong. So then she leaves. She said, well, I'm sorry. And I said, okay. So she leaves, and I take the papers downstairs to the front desk, and I give it to the front desk. And I explain to the front desk what's going on. So they said, you know, we're going to put it in his file, and we're going to, you know, have this meeting tomorrow with my boss about the little boy and, you know, and them terrorizing the other little boy who's 8 years old, 7 years old, the little heavily melanated black boy. So I have a meeting tomorrow, maybe 8 o'clock in the morning, to explain to her, who is a suspected racist, that they're terrorizing her, you know, terrorizing him. And, you know, this other boy who wrote this letter to my daughter,
wrote this note to my daughter. And this is not the first incident with him. He drew another picture of him shooting another little white boy and drew a noose on the picture. And I took it down to the front desk. They documented it. They put in his file, and he still remains at the daycare. He's never been suspended. I had issues with him last year where he tried to unbuckle another child while I was driving them. You know, I drive them to and from school, so he tried to unbuckle another child while I was driving and was pushing him out of his car seat. So I had to pull over, you know, follow procedure, call the daycare, let them know what's going on. So then I switched the seating so he wouldn't be next to the other kid. And I asked him, why are you doing this? And he says, this is my right. This is my right. The words that he used at 8 years old is, you wouldn't believe his vocabulary at 8 years old. So I don't make excuses for their behavior because they know exactly what they're doing. And when he wrote this, you know, this letter to my daughter, I didn't tell his mom, because in daycare, you're not supposed to let the parents know who the other child is, you know, a fear of repercussions or anything. So I didn't let her know that was my child that he wrote this to. So I was a professional. I said, well, he did this, he did that. But when I went to the front desk, I said, well, I need this documented. I need something done about this because this is not the first incident. And you guys continue to have this with it. This same little boy caused another black woman to lose her job this past summer because he accused her of choking him. And, you know, and they asked the kids in the classroom, did this happen? The kids say no. They asked myself, I was in a meeting. I said, no, this did not happen. They asked my co-teacher, did this happen? I said, no. And then, you know, the lady that was being fired, she said, well, if, you know, I'm a grown woman, if I would have choked this boy, wouldn't he have some type of bruises or, you know, my fingerprints or anything around his neck or anything? They said, well, you know, until further investigations, we have to let you go. They never investigated anything. They just let her go. The same boy accused another young black male of choking him when he was finding another child, and the black male picked him up and moved him to the side. I was there to witness this too. I was in the meeting. I told him, no, he didn't get choked. He said as if he put his arm around his neck and lifted up by his neck. So the young black male, you know, said that he doesn't want any parts of what's going on. So he put his 2 weeks notice in and he, you know, basically quit and moved on. He threatened to have me fired. You know, my mom will sue this place. My mom will, you know, I will get you fired. And because I refused to take him on a field trip because he was terrorizing the classroom. So I said, I won't take you anywhere if you cannot listen here. Why would I take you on a field trip? And I will have you fired. So now I have to have another meeting where he's had someone fired before and explain to my racist boss, you know, that these kids are terrorizing one kid, you know, this black male. And, you know, she's not going to do anything about it. I know. She's probably going to waste my time. But now I have to sit and have this conversation with her. So, you know, if anybody has any thoughts, I appreciate it. Thank you.
This is one of those where I think in terms of codification, and for me, I think codification in terms of solving problems, being able to recognize problems well in advance so that you have a more than adequate time to figure out the best means of eliminating this problem or even stopping this before this becomes a problem. With this little terrorist, this just seems like a gargantuan problem in a myriad of ways. And I think that's the correct way to view the meeting for tomorrow. This is a white woman that I'm going in to talk to, another race soldier, and that she is just going to add to the problem, that, you know, she is not here to help my work situation or to make my job cushy for me or to help me deal with this little terrorist. That's not her job at all. They might even be working in cahoots together, her and this little 8-year-old. I would be trying to think of what it is that you can, what it is that you'd like to get accomplished in the meeting tomorrow, what it's possible to get accomplished in the meeting tomorrow, and working towards how can you deal with this situation so that you can minimize problems he can potentially cause for you and other children. I hope you're able to get your own personal photograph of the...
I do.
Great, because it would not surprise me at all if we lost the image where he said he's going to kill everybody. We lost it and the other things. So great that you got that documented. I would really be thinking in terms of what codification do I need in place to protect myself in case he is saying that I choked him or, you know, any other accusation, since he's got a track record for this sort of thing with black teachers. I think we even had a black educator on before who was talking about black teachers practicing racism against white students. If you give me a second, I think I can go back and get her name. But we talked about this, and I think I told her that, you know, that was absurd. Those racist children can show you better than I can tell you who has more power. And then protecting the black children that are in your care. You said he's deliberately targeting what seems some of the darker black students in your class, even your daughter, who's in the class, I guess at times, or in the vicinity with him. Those would be the two pieces of code that I would be working on. Are you by yourself? Like, are you the only adult present with him at times?
No, I have a co-teacher who happens to be my sister, okay. And she was the one that came back and told me that the other little boy called the heavily melanated boy, an emotional primate. And then I asked him, what did it mean? And he said, oh, he's my emotional ape. No problem, no hesitation, no, like, oh, why would I say this in front of her? No problem. He's my emotional ape. And we're just looking at each other. You know, I'm not too stunned, but when you see it in your face, it's like, are you kidding me? And, you know, but they are, I would say, white supremacists in training. They're right on target to be superb white supremacists. And one thing I was struggling with, and because this happened, this is over a 2-week period, is that once we tell the parents what's going on, all they're doing is teaching them how to refine their racism, refine it. And, you know, they're not stopping. They're just refining it. So I'm like, I don't want to contribute them into refining it, you know, refining it. But I also have to report it, because this little boy, he's being emotionally affected by it to the point where now he's like, everyone hates me. And I didn't know today, I told the front desk that I know, you know, the front desk clerk, she's a black woman. I said, well, I know why he's being targeted, because it's the same set. It's a certain group of kids that's doing this. And she looked at me like she understands. But I said, but I don't know if he knows. So when I talked to my sister today, and she said he knows why he's being targeted, because he said they don't like me because I'm dark skin. I have dark skin. And he has a sister that's 4, and she's dark skin. Their parents are Ghanaian immigrants, so they're, you know, really dark skin. And she tells her teacher, who's another black woman, that you're my only friend. You're my only friend. These other kids, they won't play with me. You're my only friend. And that really broke my heart, because I'm like, she's 4. Then, you know, look how early they start in their terrorism, you know, towards them. So, and he now that I understand that he knows that they're terrorizing him because he's dark skinned. And a lot of this happens sometimes with me coming into the classroom. But today, when he gave my daughter the note, I was in the classroom. He gave it to her right when she's standing next to me. And I get the note, she turned it to me, and I look at it, and he's laughing. He's not ashamed. He's not, you know, like, don't give it to her. He's laughing. And when his mom asks him, why are you doing this? He says, because I think it's funny. I think it's funny. So he gets enjoyment out of terrorizing black kids.
That is racist culture. Did listeners have suggestions for, you know, what you would say in the meeting tomorrow, what you'd be trying to accomplish, or suggestions for dealing with this racist child moving forward to protect your own job as well as to protect the other black children?
Can I be heard?
Wow.
Let's start with the black females, and then we'll make sure we get everybody. Heard a few of them.
Okay, I'll go after the other lady.
Okay. Is there another black? Okay. Right on, Emmy. Go ahead.
Thank you, Leslie. Just a couple of things. Number one, I think if you haven't already, I would sit down tonight, maybe after the call, and write a very detailed list of the instances that he has exhibited behavior that is perhaps not constructive for himself and for the other children that he's around. I would center the conversation, or propose potentially centering the conversation, like getting your mind state to frame how you're going to talk to this white woman more about his development and the safety of children versus him being a terrorist. I don't think that language is going to work well. And if the last that you've rehearsed is this conversation that you've had here on the cows, I think you'll be more inclined to not have the proper verbiage to articulate exactly what you're trying to say in a way that's going to be constructive for you and the other black kids that are in the daycare. So I think I'm making myself clear. If you come off like you're trying to just call them a terrorist and all these bad things, that white female is not going to really hear you. But if you make it more about like the children's development, he's exhibiting behaviors that might be considered antisocial or non-constructive or unhealthy, then for himself and these other children, then there may be something more closer to a resolve. Because it's not that the white mother doesn't know. I think that whole, why did you do that, was more for you than it was for him or for her. She was like, well, I have to make it look like I care, so I'll do that. And then that means, like, if all of these things have happened, I would like to say that it's perhaps the director's already kind of privy to the situation about who this white kid is. So it's not becoming like you're personally having something against this child. It meant more from a, like, I care about everybody's well-being and I'm trying to make this a great place for everybody. Also, if there's any place in like the mission or on the website, like I'm sure if it's a daycare or something, that there should be something that says this is supposed to be a safe learning environment for everyone, like being, you know, kind of pulling out that kind of verbiage and saying, well, you know, based off of this, I'm not really sure how best to move forward because I don't know how to work in like with this situation, to work with an individual who feels completely at liberty, you know, and then inquire to his like psychiatric care or if he's receiving anything or like what's been done in the past, ask, like have an entire list of questions. I would highly recommend not to allow this white woman to just ask you a bunch of questions about what you think should be done, about what you think about his character, what you think about his personality or whatever. I think having a bunch of questions for this white woman will be more constructive just because I think it's just a setup. And like you've already seen, you have enough evidence to let you know that how this could end. So I would be like, I'm not really sure what to do. I'm also kind of surprised, this is just an aside, like why the parents are not in on this conversation. Like, I don't really know what you and the director have to talk about that don't involve the parents or the children that are involved, because I mean, it's bullying. So technically this is like incident reports and stuff like that should be written, as far as, I mean, I'm aware, like if you know, anyway, I could be totally incorrect, but I'd even ask that, like, at what point do we get the parents involved so that they can figure out what to do? What should I do in a situation like this? Also, another thing I think that you should do is immediately, like as soon as you possibly can. I don't know what state you live in. So again, I'll state that I don't know the rules for all of the recording and stuff like that, but having maybe some type of voice recorder that you can wear on you so that like when he starts saying stuff, like you can actually just have that. I don't know, you know, whenever that might be good or useful or constructive, but it might be something worth having. That could just record the conversation, and if nothing happens that day, then you can just delete it. But if there's something, then you can use it. But essentially what I'm saying is, like, when the call ends, like, really sit down and frame your mind so that this is completely professional. You're a caretaker of all the children, and you're, you know, you want the best for everybody, and you're just trying to figure out what is the best way to go about this, and have a million and one questions, that's extreme hyperbole, but a lot of questions for this white woman about how to proceed dealing with this child so that everybody
can have a safe environment. And then, I don't know, like, you might just not have had enough time to really talk about it, but to be, like, figuring out ways that you can counteract this, the negative effects that this white terrorist is having on the brown children. So, like, I don't know, you know, what tools you have available to you and what you can do, but just, like, being like, no, that's not true. Like, I don't know how it's going to end, but if you see something happening between, like, the white kid and the black kid, and then you just watch and it's like, man, that's, like, really bad. Like, maybe saying something directly to the black kid or doing something to where, like, the black kids can be together to shield each other away from the white kids, because, like, I mean, I know you can't, like, there might be rules and stuff, but just figuring out, like, some kind of way to where to protect the black kid's energy and not really isolate, I guess that's the wrong word, but get that white kid to go play with the other white kids. Like, he don't need to be around the black kids all the time with his, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know the best way to say it, but the best way to do it, or to figure out some kind of creative way. And then I really think, like, honing in one point out really with this director is the parents need to, like, this white woman needs to come in and, like, talk about the future psychological development of her child and what she expects to happen. Because based off of what has happened, we can only expect it to get worse in the future, and that's not going to be correct for everybody at the thing. If I think of something later in this time, I might chime in, but you had a lot to say, so I hope some of that is constructive. But I would totally write it out and totally plan it out, and I'd even, like, say it and make sure to remove certain words from my from when I was speaking to this white woman, and make sure that you ask her the questions, not she asking you the questions. That's it.
Thank you.
The other female caller who spoke up simultaneously, did you have suggestions?
I was she pretty much hit the nail on the head, what I was going to say. My biggest concern was, does the little black child know, parents know what is going on? I know you can't tell them who's doing these things, but as a parent who has a child, I would like to know if my child is being terrorized so that I can combat that at home. Because if he's just going home and his parents do not know what he's facing at that daycare, he's going home and he is internalizing all of that. And that can lead to, as we've seen on multiple occasions, kids harming themselves, kids committing suicide, because our children are not being mentally, physically, spiritually, their energy is not being protected. And as she said, I feel that you need to sit down and just figure out a way to protect his energy and to protect his mental state. And I feel that his parents need to be brought in on what's going on at the daycare, because they can move him. They can put him and his sister in a different daycare if it is not remedied. And sometimes when they hear it from the parent and it is costing them money, they are more inclined to make changes. But everything that she just stated, I agree with that. I was going to say, write some things down, have your own questions, and speak more about his mental stability and that you care about that. As far as little terrorists, that you care about that more than, talking about him being a terrorist and doing all these things. And he's, you know, he's a little race soldier in training. But, you know, change your vocabulary around to make it more about his mental state and the mental state of the other kids in the classroom because of the things that he's doing. That was it. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Overall, that was pretty much what I was initially going to touch on, but I did want to add that I was thinking that she might want to kind of like, you know, as far as us when we talk about workplace racism, referring back to the employee manual. And like the other caller was saying, is that, you know, when most of these daycare centers have their mission statements or their credo statements, as far as what is their goal in these organizations and stuff. And I think if when she has this meeting with this the director or whoever it is that she's going to have a meeting with, to ask them, basically find out what are the behaviors or the expectations that they would expect to have of the children that come to the facility. What are the certain characteristics or behaviors that you would expect of the children when they come in inside the building, and how are they supposed to be conducting themselves? And if that is not being followed, what is the course of action, or how do we remedy the behaviors, and how do we get the parents involved in correcting it? Because going back to what the others have said, this is going to be impacting the others, the other children's well-being and their mental state, as far as, you know, their confidence, you know, how they interact with one another. And it just throws off the overall energy throughout the facility if you got these little minions doing all this stuff to the other non-white kids. So I would just suggest, as well as like the other caller was saying, don't, whether it's adults or if you're dealing with children, you know, don't, when you go into a meeting, don't let them dictate the course of the conversation. Kind of put the ball in their court. Let them know that you understand what's going on. You don't have to be as direct as how we're speaking on the line. But like they were saying, just change your verbiage, but still have the same impact when you're in the meeting with them. But I would definitely ask them certain behaviors that you look for in the children to exhibit when they're here in the facility throughout the day, and why isn't that being followed, and what we need to do to correct that.
Are there any other female callers who had suggestions for this situation, how to deal with the meeting tomorrow with the white educator or the racist child in training? Males. We got all the females. Any males who had suggestions? We got all the suggestions. No more suggestions for the meeting tomorrow dealing with the racist child. And folks can think about this. I at least was thinking, like, asking directly or stating directly, I have concerns if there are two administrators who are no longer employed here as a result of their interaction with this child and being accused of touching him. And if there are situations where he's threatening violence against other students. I know I have worked with children. If this is already a child where he's threatening violence against other children and what have you, do we need a plan in place to make sure that there are no more accusations of staff doing anything to him, harming him? Do we need a plan in case something happens, if he's threatening violence? What happens if he needs to be restrained? You know, if I'm in the classroom with him, I might have to put my hands on him to, well, I don't know if y'all do that, but I mean, I have worked with children before. You might have to restrain them. What am I supposed to do then? Especially this should be a concern if he's already, you know, threatening violence, saying that I'll kill you myself. That might be a question that I would ask, presenting it as a concern. And then do we have appropriate measures in place to see that this is not continuing to happen where staff is being accused? And I would definitely make sure to look over the policy and procedure once you have, I mean, in this age with Columbine and everything else, the school shooting, Sandy Hook, and whites at least trying to pretend that they care about children. I would for sure go over the policy and procedure about once a child has made this sort of threat of violence on school property to make sure, like, they have done everything as stipulated in policy and procedure. And if not, I would definitely have a question about that as well.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Is this a public? Yeah, is this a public or a private institution?
It is a private. I would say it's a daycare / church. Half of the building is a church, Christian church, and the other half of the building is one is a daycare. So the kids do some type of like religious activities. But
they're not actually with the church. So, and I've been working there almost 8 years.
Is there a state body that officiates over the governance of these private institutions? Is there some sort of officiating body governed by the state that they have to answer to at all?
I'm not too sure. I know they tell us that they're a nonprofit organization. That's all they tell us, that they're nonprofit. So I'm not too sure. We do have inspectors that come in and inspect the area for the food, but they don't have the USDA food program. But they do have people to come and make sure that you have outlet covers and the doors that are supposed to be locked are locked, and the bathroom is sanitary, it's clean. So, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well, if I were you, I would find out who is in charge of making sure that that is a safe place for children, period. Because if they did not investigate this situation where a child claims to have been harmed, if they did not fully investigate that, that needs to be reported. If they are continuing to allow a child who has threatened other children with death to persist in that environment, I think that that has to be some sort of violation of the children's safety that the administration at that school has not effectively dealt with. So I would look into who is in charge of the safety overall of the children, and that I wouldn't ask those questions of this manager, but I would be quickly looking into that. And that might make your position a little more tenuous at this job, but I would definitely be focused on maintaining the safety of these children, because that is the fact that they're letting that child stay around the other children that he wrote down a death threat to, and you have evidence that this death threat exists and that this child is still there, that's something that needs to be reported to somebody, and you need to go over some people's heads over at that institution. That's disgusting that they let that persist.
Yeah. We had a similar incident maybe 2 years ago where a teacher was accused of yanking little child, who's a white girl, yanking her arm and pulling her out of the chair. So another black teacher seen it, and she said, well, I have to report it because this little girl has a bruise on her arm. So when the other teacher seen it, saw it, she reported it. And at that time, my boss I have now, her boss was the director. So when the teacher reported it, she told her, well, when they come in to investigate, let us talk to them. Let us handle it, let us talk to them. So the teacher said, well, okay, well, I'll let you handle it, but if they ask me questions, I have to be truthful. So she said, okay, but, only tell her certain things. So the teacher anyway, I know personally, she told, and they investigated, and the other teacher who did pull the arm, she was terminated. And the teacher that told was also terminated 2 months later. She was told, they called her and a co-teacher in the office that witnessed this abuse. Called her in the office and said, well, we're going to close your classroom down and we're going to make it into a computer room. So now I've been working there 8 years. So they have never closed their classroom down. They never turned it into a computer room. They fired both of those teachers who witnessed the abuse and spoke on it freely instead of letting the daycare handle it. And let them tell, social services or, people that came in and investigated, let them, they told the complete true story instead of letting them handle it and saying what they want to say. So it's been, yeah, it's been about 2 years.
Hang on one second. Context of white supremacy. We have people who wrote in that I did not get to finish reading all of their commentary, and we only have about 10 minutes left in the program, so we'll probably have to leave it there for the school portion, because I do want to make sure if there's anybody that we missed, if they have a comment that they would like to get in as well. One of the folks who wrote in their commentary, I'm a student at UDC, and the university is considered an HBCU, historically black college university. And we have a large population of Saudi Arabians at the university, like 50%. On your program, there's a lot of discussion about code. These people have theirs down pat, and they only socialize with each other. I'm very suspicious of them because they have no care in the world. They are not very smart and don't come to class. They cheat on tests. They will take pictures of exams and wait for someone to text back the answers. I know people who worked with them on projects and did nothing to contribute. I was wondering if other listeners have observations on these people in schools or work. I generally stick with white, non-white. I mean, you can include that information. That's great. But just to make sure that everyone understands whether or not these people are classified as white or not white, and then if folks have their observations, we can do that as well. Are there folks that we have missed completely? Anybody who is on the line with us now that we have not heard from at all have commentary that they want to share?
Yes, may I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I'm a first-time caller. Actually, I emailed you last week to share my story about the flag posted at work. I just had a short comment that happened recently. Beyond that, I had a non-white Hispanic speaking female leaving the bathroom where I work at. It's a retail environment. She walked past me and, you know, she left my department. Then she turned around and came back to me and asked me, "Do you work here?" I said, "Yes, I do." And like she was in fear, she said, "Can you please do me a big favor?" I said, "What's that?" "The guy over there, and it's a black man. You know, he's in the purse department." I said, "Can you please call loss prevention on him?" So I looked over there and I told her he works here. So she looked shocked. So she said, "Him?" I said, "Yes, he works here." And, you know, she's just kind of embarrassed and just walked away. So that's some short that happened recently. I just wanted to share.
Suspicious looking Negress.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I just said suspicious looking Negress. you were going to add more?
You know
more?
What? The funny thing about that is the guy who was over there in the purse department, I thought he was like a merchandiser or like a sales associate. He just transferred to the loss prevention department. So he was actually working as a, you know, loss prevention security, you know, being incognito or whatever. So if I were to call loss prevention, I would possibly be calling his life.
Context of white supremacy. We apparently always look suspicious when it is whites who are the ones who are committing all the crimes worldwide, large and small. The person who dialed in, and we've had a number of first-time callers today. Hooray. The person who called in, last four digits, 0750. Did you have commentary you wanted to share?
I had originally had just feedback for the educator working in the daycare. I don't know if we still
take
in comments about that.
Let's hear the feedback.
I was just going to suggest, you know, I work in schools myself, and I know early on in my career, educators or administrators rather would, they would try to avoid addressing certain issues by saying how many times have we documented the instance before trying to escalate it. So I just wanted to suggest that she make sure she has, you know, written documentation, but whatever the school's procedures are, if they have a referral system or if they have an incident report system, making sure that she has at least two or three of those written and documented
to bring with her to the meeting. Maybe speaking privately with the administrators beforehand just to understand what is their perception of the situation, because given that it's a private school or private program, they may be well aware of the issue, and maybe because of whatever tuition they're receiving from that family or whatever the case may be, they're not even interested in addressing it the way she is. So she can get on the same page and just understand the motives of the daycare. She can start to understand better if there will be a solution that will be in the best interest of, you know, herself as the educator and the other students, or if she might have to look into eventually finding ways maybe to remove herself from that situation if it looks like the administrators there don't have any intention of actually getting a resolution themselves. And then the last thing I was going to suggest was, since it's a private institution, maybe looking at some of the public schools in that area, the elementary schools. I know in my county we have things called the discipline matrix and positive behavior plans, which help us to kind of formulate, I guess what we would call like the district's codified language when dealing with parents. Instead of saying things like, you know, obviously the student's, you know, exhibiting racist behavior, but avoiding that language and saying things that are more codified, like maladaptive behavior, you know, some of the things that other callers said, you know, in terms of, you know, other students being harmed, things like that, but looking for a discipline matrix from a public elementary school and maybe trying to pull some of the language, the verbiage from that, just to remain completely professional so no one can kind of turn it around on her and say she's jumping to conclusions. Instead, she'll be using language that's supposed to be constructive for all students to be in an environment that's, you know, safe. So those are the only things I wanted to add.
Awesome. Awesome. Great suggestions. The other person wrote in, I think I got the emails. I might have missed a new one if somebody wrote something within the last few minutes or so. This person wrote in, a few years ago, I worked for a company where we had tons of downtime. We would not have any work to do for weeks at a time. After getting permission from my supervisor, I used my downtime to read. Uh-oh. I was minding my business reading when I heard my white male coworker talking to a few other white male coworkers about his white girlfriend. He was telling them about her being on drugs and her being in prison. He then says, you know, when my girlfriend was out, she was raped by her drug dealer. Then he calls my name and says, oh yeah, he was black. I asked him, why do I need to know that? I'm not a rapist. He says, I know, man. I was just saying. He later found out that the girlfriend was lying. Uh-oh. She was having a consensual sexual relationship with the black male. White women are dangerous, putting it mildly. We have about 3 minutes left. Did folks have any final commentary they wanted to get in before we conclude this week's segment, Workplace Racism?
Goss?
Yes, ma'am. Stacy hanging tough with us in London. Go ahead.
Gus, the only thing I wanted to add to the school situation was, and again, just using the correct language that is used in that field, but is to request. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Is to just request some support for the parent, because clearly you've discussed the matter with her. And she also seems to be exhibiting difficulties with her parenting skills. So that's the only other thing I would add in.
Nice. Is there, I don't know if there's any, just on the school piece, for the young black child, the victim here who's being terrorized, any support for his parents I think would be grand as well, so that they know that this is happening, and whatever, I guess, plan you all are coming up with tomorrow in the meeting, whatever the results of that, I think that might be, or maybe that's something that can be brought up in the meeting, you know, to make sure that she knows this is happening, what you've seen with the child. He knows that he's being targeted because they're racist, to make sure that his parents are notified of this, or his caregivers are notified of this as well. That might be a good thing to do. Anything? Thought I heard someone.
It was me.
His mother, I'm sorry, go ahead.
All I was going to say is I think a similar approach can be taken with the non-white child's parents, because he's also experiencing or presenting emotional distress. So it's about that well-being as well. So using that language, perhaps. Mm.
The, I guess, go ahead, ma'am, go ahead.
His mother came up to the daycare last week when he did tell his mom that the little boy called him dirty and told him he couldn't play with him. So she came up to the daycare last week, and she put a complaint in last week. But he continued the behavior today, and he targeted my daughter today. So he's still exhibiting this behavior. I don't know if the director actually spoke with the little boy, the white boy's mother, but she spoke with the black boy's mother last week.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. That that again, I mean, and you see that pattern. I think that was Princess. She called in today. She gave suggestions for this situation as well. But she also talked about her own workplace incident where the white terrorist came on her job site and said that he was going to come back and kill everybody. Sounds like the older version of this little race soldier that you got in your daycare situation. But he said that, and I guess his partner was trying to get sympathy, and I think he just got banned from the store for like a year or something like that. You let a black 6-year-old, 7-year-old go to school or daycare and say, I'm going to kill everybody here myself, or I'm going to kill you myself, and see if he doesn't or she doesn't wind up being charged as an adult and handcuffed on the site. They have roughed up black children for far less. Just the system of white supremacy. They might even call that discretion, where white children make these violations and, you know, they choose how they're going to handle it or not handle it, whether this becomes a punitive act and ends up being in your permanent file, or whether we, you know, we'll give little Johnny another chance. We'll see if he can get it together. 8 is a tough age. That discretion comes up a lot on the system of racism and white supremacy on the plantation. With that, that is our 3. We should be here tomorrow for Coretta Scott King's autobiography, which has been absolutely stunning. I've been so impressed, and we haven't even really read very much of it. We're starting right at the beginning of chapter 6 tomorrow, My Life, My Love, My Legacy, audio segment number 3. You can catch up in the archives if you missed the first. We only did 2 installments, so you're not very far behind. We will be here on Saturday for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review what's gone down the last 7 days. And then this Sunday is our monthly Global Sunday Talk on Racism. Stacey might be with us from UK and other folks joining in from around the world. We will look back global perspective on what has been going down, global context of racism, white supremacy. If you have suggestions, if you have workplace racism commentary that you want to write in, feel free. We can add it next week. If you have guest suggestions, contact. I think we had multiple people in Dallas ring in the program today. Just drop an email with whatever commentary or question that you have, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we'll make an effort to get back to you immediately. Thanks, everyone, for participating. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening, or in Stacey's case, Friday morning. Hopefully you got some suggestions, some material to help you better deal with the terrorism and war that's being waged against you on your job. And that's even if you're black, self-employed, multi-billionaire. I am pretty sure you are still experiencing workplace racism, unless I'm just really in error about what's happening on the planet. With that, I said it once this broadcast, but I will definitely with pride say it again. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I have seen no evidence that being under the influence of alcohol, cannabis, tobacco, any other intoxicants, narcotics, I have seen no evidence that that is going to aid us in ending the problem. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. And in fact, I think there is a substantial amount of evidence that being intoxicated has done a lot to help whites continue to stomp on and dominate us for decades. I think Dr. Welsing, Mr. Fuller, Dr. Cambon, Dr. Amos Wilson, I think you could probably pile up a lot of folks that we reference and say that we have a lot of regard for their work and how it's helped us understand racism. I suspect a lot of those folks in unison would say sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Kyle signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm a up. Victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.